east of the Rockies, and you're listening to AM 1500 KSTP. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, as the case may be across all these many prolific time zones, stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains all the way eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands, south into South America, north all the way to Santa Country at the Pole. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and oh yes, worldwide on the internet, forgot that. You're in for a treat tonight as we enter the Zone O'Halloween. My guest is going to be Brad Steiger, author of The Awful Thing in the Attic, along with many, many other books. As a matter of fact, probably nigh on to about 130 some odd books by now. I don't know. He writes books by the week, almost. Brad Steiger coming up, and we'll kind of warm you up for Halloween. Tomorrow night, we do the annual Ghost to Ghost show. And that is the show in which you have an opportunity to tell the most horrific, horrible ghost stories that really occurred to you or someone close to you. And as we learn every year, there are so many of those that it generally is not possible to capture them adequately in one night. In fact, we may even take part of two and do Friday night, Saturday morning as well, at least some portion of that. It is very chilling because, like the ones you may hear tonight from Brad, these ghost stories are real. You know, this is not sort of sit around the campfire and just make stuff up. These are real ghost stories, because ghosts are real. Anyway, Brad Steiger coming up, and we'll kick it all off here in a bit.
The fact.
I will read to you what's on the back of The Awful Thing in the Attic. Brad Steiger is the author of more than 100 books, if that's true, on the strange and unknown. Here, referring to this book, he draws upon his 40 years as a psychic researcher to select the eeriest, spookiest, scariest, true stories. Underline true. It comes, of course, from his own investigations and from his extensive files of the paranormal and the mysterious. Of course, people send him things. Steiger and his wife Sherry live in Forest City, Iowa, the heart of America, with cats, ghosts, and Scandinavian pixies. Brad Steiger, hello.
Hello, Arthur.
Great to have you back.
Well, great to be back with you.
It's the right time of year for Steiger.
Yes.
I love Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, I don't know why, but yes, I do. I guess I love to be scared.
Yes.
Why do people like to be scared, Brad? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that. I think it's an affirmation that they are alive. We are alive. If you're scared, if you're fearing, and the thing with ghost stories is, no matter how eerie and spooky they may be, they are an indicator that life goes on beyond the grave.
You bet. And that is, I guess, one of the two great questions that we could have answered in our lifetimes. We may never have it answered, but you're right. It's the great question, and it is an affirmation that there would be a lot, some sort of existence after death, even if possibly not such a pleasant one in some cases.
Mm-hmm. I think, again, I've just had a real education as I've traveled around investigating from coast to coast and overseas as well. I began pretty solidly intellectual about the approach to the unknown. I really felt that so much of it was people's misinterpretations, their own deceptions, misinterpretations of the hot water pipes bumping and thumping. And certainly there could not be such a thing as an actual spirit that hung on. Mm. And of course, I came also, you have to remember, I came from evangelistic Christian background in which these sort of things were anathema as well. So once I had expanded from that base, I still kept a very, very solid approach to it, except I had to balance it with my own experiences growing up in a haunted house. Our farm was originally a stagecoach stop. So again, all sorts of drama had gone on there, I suppose, and the sounds that we would hear in the middle of the night, and it seemed primarily my mother, my sister, and myself would be up in the middle of the night. You know, what was that? Did you hear that? Doors opening and closing, footsteps walking around, and strange sounds outside. My dad was the kind of person that if you couldn't see it, taste it, or touch it, it didn't exist. He was also a very strongly Orthodox religious man, but he never laughed. He never made fun because he knew that we were genuinely experiencing something, and I think he just could not have seen when the... when the salt shakers lifted and the doors closed. I think he chose not to.
All of that was really going on?
Oh, yes.
Salt shakers lifting.
I think he chose not to, Art, because people can do that.
Oh, know? I know. They can sort of blanket out. If it absolutely violates their belief system, they can blanket out.
The telephone receiver, you know, lifting off the hook and dropping out in front of everybody when no one's near it.
Really?
Footsteps thumping and bumping, the doors slamming shut. And again, these types of things. And then my mother's own paranormal abilities. I guess I had a balance there.
Wasn't all of this a bit much for your dad?
He was just most wonderful. Sherry said he was as close to a saint as anyone she has met. He somehow dealt with it all in terms of his conventional and Orthodox religion.
Now, I didn't know that your mom had paranormal abilities or psychic abilities. What exactly can you tell me about her?
Well, we have been linked up ever since I was a child. We have a strong telepathic connection. But as a child, I remember she was very mediumistic. It began for her when she was just a little girl, and an angel appeared before her older sister and herself. And the entity was solid enough, Art, that it left imprints of its sandals in the gravel road near the country home where they lived. Now, my mother's older sister is as strongly a rational, objective person who has ever walked the earth. There is also, I suppose, a slight competitive edge between sisters.
Of course.
So again, my aunt would not, and to this day, she substantiates what they saw. She simply would not, if she had not.
How does a person how do you say it was an angel?
That's their interpretation. The entity was dressed in a robe. It was glowing. It walked down the lane of their neighbor, or seemed to walk. And next thing they saw was the shadowy form of their neighbor walking with the angel, and the man died that night. Oh. So what they in essence saw was an angel of death coming to take a soul home. So she had a number of experiences like that as a child, and then I remember when she was a child, and when I was a child, I remember her when the little lady would come and talk to her at night, then she would be able to tell Dad, you better get the crop in, you better do this because a storm is coming, whatever. And it was always the lady who told her. So I recognized that that was, in essence, like a spirit guide. And in that same home, every night when I was a child, nearly every night, from the closet would issue a very stern-looking man and woman who would come. stand at my bedside, look down at me. I'd pull the covers, and I'd peek, and they'd still be there. I'd pull the covers, peek, they'd still be there. Mm. They never smiled at me, but yet I never felt they're going to harm me. And you know, it wasn't until I was an adult when I saw pictures in the family book that they would have been my great-grandparents.
Really? You know, to this day, I think I might have mentioned this to you before, I am a little strange about closets. I will not go to sleep with a closet open.
That's interesting, yes.
No way. I will get up out of bed and I will close a closet. My wife thinks it's a riot. I don't like closets. There's things in closets. I've known that since I was your age, you know, a youngster.
Right, right.
I've always felt that way, and I always close closets. Now,
I do too.
You do?
Because of that, because I know, I think it's a symbol. And I think when you lie there and see that, it's an open door. You can't really see what's in it.
Right.
I think it's like a symbol of the doorway to the unknown.
Maybe that's it.
What it's become to me.
But you actually saw something there.
Yes, yes. They would come out, and not every night, but frequently enough so that eventually, you know, I just kind of smile and said goodnight to them because I realized. Now, I think that set a pattern for me too, Art, is I saw that, okay, and I found out with my other, with the other kids at school that probably I saw people that they didn't. But I never felt fear then because I saw that there was no harm. So I suppose that's the objective part of me that has been able to just kind of focus and study and be more intrigued by what is going on.
All right. Well, one of my great questions of all time regarding ghosts or poltergeists is whether we're looking at a sort of a distant echo, a past echo that is in some sort of endless tape repeating loop of somebody doing something again and again and again, or whether we're actually observing a spirit somehow coming to or trapped on Earth in real time. Now, when you get warnings about things that are going to happen, that would seem to lean toward the side of real time, that there's really a spirit there.
Yeah, I have to, at this point, I have to check all of the above. When I began my career as a psychical researcher, I was totally enthralled by the theory that you previously mentioned, and I still say that is responsible for 90% of the hauntings, and that is, there is a faculty or capacity within the human psyche that somehow activates or receives impressions from, as you said, it's like a film loop.
Yeah.
Because the entities do the same thing night after night. And it's always been my contention, or was my contention, that you could no more interact with those entities on that psychic loop than you could with the entities you see in your television set or your movie screen.
Right.
You know, you can talk to Sam Donaldson all you want, but he's not going to hear you, and it's been tested that he will not respond to you. That was my theory, and I still maintain that that's in the majority of cases. However, then, when I arrogantly slammed the door on an entity or whatever and had it kicked open and then myself lifted into the air along with several other people because I had definitely annoyed whatever it was there, I had to recognize in some cases there is the unknown, there's an intelligence there that I'm just devoting my life to trying to define. And then in other instances, I do believe that there is a spirit contact. And certainly in terms of spirit guides and contacts there, I'm a complete believer in that, angels and guides and so forth.
Sure. So there are so many different categories. Do you think they all stem from the same basic place, the other side, or do you think that one is a relic or some sort of psychic relic of this world and has nothing at all to do with the other side? I'm asking questions that I'm sure you can't answer.
Well, I have fun trying. I think it's at least both art. I think that there are entities that, in other words, let me rephrase that. I think there is an unseen world. And I think there are negatives that may be, and oh, I never use this word, evil. But again, if that upsets people, they'll just say disruptive entities or negative entities that some people call demons. And then I think there are, certainly there's a symbiotic relationship. There is no question. Ghosts, spirits need us. They need us which to communicate. We're not talking about ghosts now, that memory pattern that we were talking about, the theory that you like and that I like for most of it. But when you get into spirits and entities, then they need us in order to fulfill their communication. But that's where people really have to be careful.
All right, I want to interject something here. I had a young lady on the air the other night who really shocked me, who really scared me. Her name, and we interviewed her for 4 hours straight. Her name was Patsy, and she called herself Harlot. She's a real devil worshiper. I mean, hail Satan.
Sure.
She came from a background where her ex-husband had murdered her five-year-old. She was very comfortable with the fact, Brad, that she was going to hell when she dies. And she embraced it. She looks forward to it. And toward the end of the program, Brad, I asked her, well, if you're certain and comfortable with the fact that you're going to go to hell, eternally burning forever, whatever hell turns out to be, what about your five-year-old, who surely was an innocent, murdered, and is in heaven? You will not be with your five-year-old. And she paused, and she said, no, that's absolutely wrong, because before my child died, I took steps to ensure that my child would be in hell with Satan. That's scary.
That's scary. Now, those people, in my opinion, have become afflicted by what I call spiritual parasites, soul parasites, entities that have somehow attached. That's why, again, I sound like an old fogey to so many young people, because I'm so strict against alcohol abuse, drug abuse, because it's when all those barriers are lowered that just go ahead and call it possession. But certainly invasion of these spirit entities can occur.
Well, she would say things like, it is my mission to subvert for Satan anybody I can. She will seduce men. She will do, I mean, really evil things.
Oh, yeah.
Brad. This was a person truly devoted to evil. And I thought at the time, either we're dealing with somebody who is mentally unbalanced, and she didn't sound that way, or we're dealing, you know, a case of schizophrenia of some sort, or we're dealing with somebody who is truly, as Father Malachi Martin would say, perfectly possessed.
Again, that's a concept that some years ago I would have laughed at. I no longer do. I think it is very real. I think I have encountered those individuals myself. I think they have surrendered and allowed themselves to be possessed or to have the soul parasites, because there's all kinds of false promises. And as Sherry has said, you know, these entities are not going to appear as beautiful, glowing, as ugly, grotesque, glowing monsters. They're going to appear as seductive angels. They're going to appear as glowing light beings. So we really have to, as scriptures say, we really have to test the spirits and those entities. And it's nothing to play around with. It's nothing to have games with. I guess that's my protest with some of the television presentations, the way they appeal to young people. They make it look like so much fun to be possessed.
Yeah, so in other words, it may actually lead children into experimenting with Ouija boards
exactly.
And all the rest of it. All right, hold on, Brad. Bottom of the hour, take a rest. We'll be right back. My guest is Brad Steiger. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play a pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle...
All right, once again, Brad Steiger. By the way, Brad, how many books are we up to now?
Interestingly, I was just asked to count them for someone to, who was putting together a bibliography. 139 published and a couple yet to come out. So I guess we can say 141.
Once again, I've got to ask, how do you do that?
Oh, I'm just so happy in my work. Just so happy doing what I'm doing. And I guess I think that's my mission, is to communicate with people in the printed form and through venues such as your wonderful radio show and some of the television appearances we do. I just think activating people, stimulating them. I've never, as you know from reading my books, I don't try to convince or sell anyone. I just present and allow people to make up their own minds, because this is important material. It really affects who we are, what we are, where we came from, and where we're going.
Do you ever have trouble with the creative process? For somebody who's written this many books, I have to ask, you know, how does it come to you? Does it come all at once? Does a book pour forth, or do you have to sweat each one through? Are some easier than others? That kind of thing.
The physicality of it never gets easy. It's still hard work writing a book, but right. Now I've got the muscles for it, so to speak. I know I can do it. You know, that's the number one thing.
You never go through great dry periods where nothing inspires you.
I don't have enough hours in the day to get everything down. I've got a whole cigar box full of ideas that I have yet to touch. But I have learned all kinds of techniques and exercises. For one thing, you know, you have to do it religiously. You can't just do it when inspiration strikes. You have to learn to control inspiration. And I always leave a sentence half finished, so you can. It's amazing trick of the mind. If you finish it, and you have to put the clean sheet of paper in there.
Yes.
It's tough getting going. So just stop right in the middle of a sentence, and it's amazing. You start, and you just go right where you were. I mean, you just pick it up. It's as if time didn't exist.
So. I'll try to remember that. Do you investigate? Do you still letters, because it stands out to you? Somebody who will write experience they're having right now. In some city, and you must be occasionally tempted to get on an airplane and go.
Well, of course, I spent 30 years doing exactly that, getting on airplanes, going all over. We don't do that as much anymore, and we've really cut down on the lecture appearances. We try to communicate by letters. I have the questionnaire that I've been sending out for over 30 years now that people fill out. And I guess the research has focused a little differently. As I said, we don't go out that often and go through the houses anymore and the actual sites like we used to.
Okay, but you did do that, and you did it for years and years and years.
Years and years and years, probably, as I say, every state in the Union, including Hawaii and Alaska. Not Alaska. I never investigated anything in Alaska, but I think every one of the other states and then overseas as well.
What were some of the more interesting trips that you can recall you made?
Oh, there's so many. One trip, this is a situation where Sherry and I did go out, so we still do it from time to time.
Okay.
This was in a bed and breakfast, and we'll just say the Northwest for now.
Okay. Do you usually protect generally sources, you know, incidents,
yes.
People, and change names to protect the innocent,
yes.
That sort of thing?
Yes. Because real estate values and all these things.
That's very true. That's very true. Any incidents of haunting?
That's right. When even the National Registry reports which houses are haunted, you know. So, no, we do protect the anonymity, which is why I'm saying it this way.
Okay.
I wouldn't even tell anyone unless I had a release. And then I would really, I'd probably change the name anyway, even if the person did get
sure,
released.
Sure.
Because people change their minds. Early in my career, I had that experience where people, oh, no, write about it, write about it. And then someone gets remarried, and the new spouse says, well, I don't want that, I mean, no. You know, and then, well, what can you do? It's
of
been
course.
Out for 10 years, you know.
Sure.
So, but then you go and collect 200,000 copies of this book, you know, you're going to have to live, but then that can get messy. So, yes, yes, we change the names, we protect the anonymity.
So, I tell you, you got a letter from somebody at this
point? No, this was one where we were requested to spend the night in this incredible mansion. I mean, it was massive.
What were they claiming?
Oh, a vast series of strange experiences. They were antique collectors, and they had literally treasures from every country imaginable. And they had done the various rooms in a motif of different, each one, you know, was a different culture, so to speak.
Sure.
But the point of it was the actual mansion itself had been constructed and lived in by, we'll say, a very eccentric multimillionaire.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to know that much about the history. When we did, later on I'll talk about a psychic safari I did with the medium Irene Hughes. When we went to several places, we collected them for about a year. We did preliminary investigation and went from place to place throughout the entire Midwest, but we never told her anything about them, you know, so that it could be pure. Otherwise, you know, you can feedback or you can use your imagination, you can project.
Contamination.
Exactly. So we stayed in this one. We chose the building particularly eerie. And but yet I didn't really feel anything, and I don't think Sherry did either. She's very sensitive. But in the middle of the night, poor Sherry was the one who
I got to ask about that. Now, who is the real devotee? Would that be you or Sherry, or are you both equally involved? Okay, Sherry, listen, there's this little bed and breakfast up in the Northwest where there's this haunting, and we want to go. I'd kind of like to go spend the night there.
It's very interesting because Sherry has, well, we each have our own abilities, and we complement each other that way.
Ah.
And who receives the impression, I think, really depends upon who we are and who the haunting is. If you can understand what I'm saying.
I can, yes.
Yeah, and she, as you know, she is an ordained church, and she has resisted. I have told her that she could be one of the most astonishing psychic clairvoyance mediums. She has had, I mean, the predictions she has, I mean, I have learned I do not question when she says don't do this or don't do that, because I used to, because of my own independent streak, and I mean, her accuracy is just incredible. But because she is a person of the cloth, she really underplays this, and of course she does put it all into a biblical context.
Sure.
Which is fine.
Sure.
Which is fine. She's coming from her perspective, and we respect one another, which is why we have a delightful marriage. First of all, she said to me, why are you sitting over in that chair when you sit next to her and say what? She saw me clearly sitting
in
first pacing. She watched me pacing the room, or so she thought it was I. Pacing the room, and then sitting in the chair and putting my head in my hands and shaking my head like I was just really upset.
Huh.
So she said, and then she realized it was not I. So she described it to me, and she says, oh, what an eerie feeling, you know. I'm talking to you across the room, and then I feel you beside me.
Yes.
And this was in the original bed. It was a huge thing, you know, so stuffed. something I would not normally sleep in. So later in the evening then, or in the night, we went back to sleep, and then Sherry feels first it's my hand reaching over and taking hers. Uh-huh. And she feels his hand, and then she feels his hand, and first she thinks, you know, that I'm reaching over, you know, as married couples will do. And then she realizes, that's not my hand. It's a little hand.
A little hand.
And then she sees, glowing, is this hand and arm, the forearm and arm of a baby, of an infant.
Oh, my God.
And it's holding her. I was on earlier the next morning and spoke to the, before Sherry came down. Okay, well, the essence, what we're talking about here, Art, is that was the room in which the baby died. The husband and wife were distressed. The husband was pacing off. He reached out finally and touched its mother's hand for consolation and then died.
Oh.
So many people have reported seeing the man pacing and then feeling and having touched and having the baby's hand reach out and touched it. Now, you see, if we had known that first, do you see what I'm saying?
Of course, it would have been a total contamination.
Well, right. Then we'd say, oh, we experienced that last. And then whether we did or we didn't, people would say, well, you know, it would be. But that's why we don't want to know. We want to know things are going on. Well, of course, the fact that it is. But again, I was thinking of the Egyptian trip.
Oh,
that you just
recovered.
When you lay down in that sarcophagus
in
the king's chamber.
There aren't words.
There aren't words. We had a manifestation when I went with a small group, Art, and an incredible, piercing sound permeated the entire king's chamber, and one of our party disappeared.
I beg your pardon. You really disappeared?
We found her. Oh, we didn't know what to do. Called her husband back in the States. We notified the embassy. I mean, we were in a panic. I mean, she disappeared from the king's chamber. Finally, about 2 weeks later, we found her living in Cairo with an indigenous couple who had treated her very kindly and had literally found her wandering the streets.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
Did she have memory of...
She was very hazy. She only knew she... I suppose she must have somehow, under our very noses, fled to death. That's not an easy place to get up and down.
Oh, no.
Were you, I was laughing because your heart could survive.
That's exactly right. In those temperatures with that climb and all those people, absolutely correct. And I will try, Brad. I got to lie in the sarcophagus.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else was willing to do it, as a matter of fact. So I did. And
why am I not surprised?
Yeah. I said some words while I was in there,
mm-hmm.
and it stopped me cold because there was an incredible, this is where it gets hard, a resonance that was more than a resonance. I could feel it in sort of every fiber of my entire body. There was definitely something happening there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it just, it was a total body feeling. It wasn't just an echo. I mean, there's a certain acoustic something or another in the king's chamber, of course.
Strange place.
But there, it was much more than that. It was, I can only imagine what it would be like to go up there, say, in the middle of the night when there was nobody around,
mm-hmm.
and spend 2 or 3 or 4 hours
mm-hmm.
in that sarcophagus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain I'd be willing to do that. I might.
Well, I think you'd really have to be prepared, you know, psychically, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The sound that manifested, we tried to have numerous people try to analyze it, and it just goes right off the spectrum. It is the eeriest thing.
Well, the sounds and the resonances in that chamber go right off the spectrum anyway. There have
right.
been some people with
right.
actual audio gear have gone in there and measured.
Yeah.
And it's totally bizarre.
But this manifested and became just so piercing. In E.T., when at the very end, Elliot touches...
Right.
There was kind of a... That
went,
and that's what occurred in the king's chamber. And it was just an incredible experience for everyone there. But I guess this one poor individual simply could not take it. And I guess somehow she managed to just poof from right in the middle, because we're in a circle holding hands. And suddenly she's gone. And what a frightening experience. But then she had been found by this very kind native couple there, Egyptian couple, and taken home to their home
for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it really is. It was a frightening experience, you know.
You definitely confirmed. Now, everybody should know, and everybody, particularly the group leader, tries to keep everybody together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
You know for sure that she had made it to the king's chamber.
Oh, yes. Because, as you say, you know, you count noses.
Sure.
And in this case, just as I assume that, you know, you and Ramona were kind of the, even though you had a guide and so forth, you were kind of the figureheads, the mucky mucks or whatever.
Well, we had Zahi Hawass with us. He was
right.
The mucky muck, really.
Right. But I mean, certainly, I suppose you felt a responsibility in a sense. And certainly I did. So, you know, this was something where I would count noses and the Egyptian guides.
And she just...
Yeah, you know, it was a horrible experience, because how do you phone home and tell someone?
Tell a husband, sorry, your wife disappeared in the king's chamber. All right, Brad, hold on. We're at the break point here. We'll be right back. So that should sort of set the tone for the kind of night we're going to have tonight. Brad Steiger is my guest. We will talk of many things as the night continues. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, this is STP.
Taking your calls on the Wildcard Line at area code 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
Yes, that's who I am. Good morning, everybody. Brad Steiger is my guest as we enter the realm of Halloween. Speaking of realms, you might want to take a second and check out the live studio cam photograph. I'll leave that up for about 30 minutes. The T-shirt I'm wearing is from the Isle of Rhodes, a Greek island, one of those I visited. That happens to be the very same island, by the way, that beautiful young lady on my website came from, where I snapped her photograph. It's there right now. On my website, www.artbell.com. I've got another announcement you're going to want to hear in a moment.
The pain.
All right. To you. And in a way, it kind of parallels what we're talking about tonight with Brad, Brad Steiger. I got a call earlier tonight from Linda Moulton Howe in Philadelphia, and she has apparently 3 frames of a video taken in, of all places, Phoenix, Arizona, under the category of your object. And that video is now on Object in the Sky, UFO. And that video is, and I will extract from it a still photograph. Then I got a call earlier today to make this a double treat from Chris Carmichael, actually North County, I guess, San Diego. And a fellow had come to him who had taken apparently as many as 26 photographs of an object in North County, I guess North County or San Diego, with a 35 millimeter camera, apparently quite clear photographs. Chris rated them and I trust his judgment, somewhere between good and excellent. So those photographs are on the way to me as well. I will scan them in some sort of high-definition mode, and all of that will be coming to my website, a website near you, specifically mine, in the next couple of days. But we're getting an awful lot of sightings, daytime sightings of things that ought not be in our skies. And there are, in a lot of ways, parallels that I see between UFOs and these weird things in our skies that you can't quite put your hand on, but occasionally you can take a photograph of, and spirits and ghosts and that sort of thing that Brad talks about. Do you see the parallels, Brad?
Oh, yes. I always have. to me, it's there's only one phenomenon. These are all extensions of one haunted planet that we live on. And ghosts, UFOs, they are so similar.
Yes. In fact, I think it's entirely possible they may even be dealing with the same phenomena.
Oh, I feel very strongly about that. My book, Gods of Aquarius, some years ago, dealt extensively with that. I think, you know, one of the great flying saucer movies is The Wizard of Oz. This glowing white sphere.
That's right.
And then when she touches down, whoop, you know, are you a good witch or a bad witch? Well, that's what we've been asking about the UFO and all this phenomena. Are you good or bad? Do you mean us harm, or are you here to help us? Are you benevolent? Are you malicious? Or is it all some kind of big Zen teaching riddle?
Mm-hmm.
Are we being led? I've said, you know, that the UFO is the symbol that's pulling us into the future. And we go all back to ancient times. That seems to be one of its facets. But certainly the area of psychic phenomena and ufology, we're not talking about denying extraterrestrial life. We're just saying that the great majority of what we experience is probably more in the realm of psychic phenomena.
I really do agree. Somebody sent me kind of a double whammy here, a bit of a joke. It shows a shopkeeper behind his kitchen is, you can haggle, but you can't cackle. And below it, there's a message for you, or a question. Now, what his belief system is regarding a belief in a higher power. Listen and watch his reaction. Well, I can listen but not watch. He has a... perfect. He has a nervous laugh. Perhaps he is actually a perfectly possessed person himself. Do his books lead people to spiritual heights or depths?
Well, have a nervous laugh?
That's what they said, yes. And if I read this... between the lines of this, they're saying, where is Mr. Steiger taking us? Is he taking us to a scary place, the depths of fear of the human soul, or is he trying to heighten us spiritually? And so I think we've got a fundamentalist on our hands here.
I would say making the same subjective evaluation... In the category of my nervous laughter, I will make a subjective evaluation and say that's what's lurking behind that question. I have made no secret that I believe in a supreme being, a higher power. It would be very difficult being married to a Protestant minister and feel otherwise, I think. That would not make harmony.
Right.
But my own belief structure, I've said, I think, on this show that I was... groomed until graduation day to go on to the seminary, but I just chose a larger congregation through my books. I have appeared and very recently with an extreme cut along famously because I have said so often that it's semantics. We are saying the same thing. I think people of spirit and goodwill should stop bickering and being picky on each other. There is a team, if you will, that those of us of goodwill and spirit should be supporting one another. We don't have to agree with everything.
Well, you were on the way to... now, there's a good question. You were on the way You were in a seminary, I guess. Is that correct? Or were you going to be on your way?
No. I announced to the Bible department. I went to a parochial school. And as a teenager, I would take over for the minister when he was on vacation.
Oh.
And I was so pious that it would make you upset to your stomach. But I just felt, I guess after my near-death experience, and I saw that denominations, in my opinion, didn't really mean a whole lot, and the emphasis is on the path of spirit, recognizing those who agree with us all the time, or who sit beside us in the church pew, but other pews and other faiths and other denominations and other churches, there are many, many faces of God. There are many, many paths to God. And that's part of the lesson of Schoolhouse Earth, is to find our path.
I too believe that, Brad. NDE, when did you have a near death?
The small town in which I lived, all my friends, everyone had been told. I suppose I was not clinically dead, but talking to the doctor who treated me, who is now nearly 90 years old, remembering, I mean, he again said I was as good as, so I got the body.
Everybody's going to want to know what had happened to you. You've got to recall, and I think I recall this story before on many, many, many new affiliates.
Right.
Many people will not have heard this. So.
Well, I'll tell it quickly because as you say, I have told it before, and I don't want to be repetitive here. But I'm an Iowa farm boy. I'm a country boy, so we were rushing to get our chores and our tasks finished so that we could do something very rare in those days: eat out to celebrate my parents' anniversary. And I did a very careless thing to hurry. Haste makes waste. To haste can also kill you. With some farm machinery, and I actually fell into the thickly scalped and head practically torn off, and I found out then that it doesn't hurt to die. It felt nothing at all.
It's what everybody says who has this experience. It doesn't hurt.
I was then moving toward this beautiful light. I realized I was dying. I had a moment of panic and fear, and then an almost ecstatic calm came over me because I saw something that I cannot put in. This is what I've seen when Sherry was doing a healing seminar, and she was using some slides of fractal geometry, and the closest I saw then was kind of like, I saw a symbol, I saw a kind of sign that somehow conveyed to me that there was a meaning and a purpose to life, and that if I did go into the light, it didn't really matter. Life would go on. The Western world and civilization as we know it would continue without me. But then I taken to what I suppose, you know, my kind of ideal concept. I mean, I spent what seemed like the next couple days in this beautiful kind of country village in the mountains, and surrounded by animals and friendly people and ice cream vendors and so forth.
Let me just stop you for one second. Gordon Michael Scallion, Dan Brinkley, a gazillion other people that I've interviewed who I consider saw geometric designs. Is there any way you can put into words? Gordon tried also.
Yeah.
What these what feeling or understanding they imparted? Are there words?
No. What it imparted was, again, to me, that there was a purpose and meaning to life. There was an author, a supreme being, if you will. There was a purpose and a plan to life. And that I had been a part of it, perhaps I would again. It was undecided whether I was going to go on at that point or not. I first revived, I was in and out the only hospital at that time, 20 miles away. And I was literally bleeding to death, the doctor then decided to make a run for it.
How long did it take them to find you, by the way, from the time this occurred until someone came upon you, or was there somebody right there?
Oh, my poor little 7-year-old sister was with me. So I began screaming, to my father then, who then, and that was a terrible place. It was bloody and painful and terrible, and I would leave again, and I would be above, and I was watching. And the interesting thing, time and space simply did not exist. I thought of my mother, and I thought, I've spoiled the plans. my mother, what's my mother's doing? And suddenly I was right beside her in the kitchen as she was making lunch and doing things. Then I thought, we were going to get together, my friends and I were going to see a big double feature cowboy movie tonight. What are they doing? And I was suddenly beside each of them as they were working on their respective family farms. But as I say, I came back.
Do you recall a sense of physical self during that time at all? I mean, is there any way to describe?
I had the sense of physical self when I realized I was dying, and I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave my parents, didn't want to leave my sister, didn't want to leave my friends. And then, as I say, there was a feeling as I, then that geometric design came. And after that, I was in just like a state of calm ecstasy. That I mean, I was just, everything was peaceful. I was contented. I felt a one. I felt totally at one. And I kept searching. Again, I felt, I suppose, because as I said, I was an extremely religious little boy. I felt I was probably going into the arms of Jesus is what I felt, because that would have been my orientation and the angels and so forth. But when I went wherever I went to kind of an idyllic dimension, I guess, until I regained consciousness probably a couple days later in the hospital. I was taken to
stopping you again for a second as as a whole community, sort of.
Well, it seemed like it to me. It seemed like there were, it was a little community of friendly, happy, caring people where I felt very much at peace. I felt welcome. I felt looked after, which again, whether that was an aspect of heaven or an aspect of my idealization of what heaven would be, I don't know. I can't say.
It may well be that heaven for all of us is a very different place. It would almost have to be.
We may take our own conceptions and desires. But I regained consciousness then. I was in a Roman Catholic hospital, and I remember the child in the room with me was sensed that I had been there. And they asked me at 11 years old, with my head completely covered with bandages and just a little space for me to speak, to tell those parents where their little girl was going and that it was a beautiful place. And I guess I began my ministry in that hospital room at age 11, comforting the parents as they sat by the bedside of their dying daughter.
This must be...
No. They seemed very conversant. And I hadn't said that much. They just seemed to sense that I had been there and back.
Wow. What I mean is the nuns obviously deal with this kind of thing on a daily basis, so they must have known that you knew.
Yes. That was the feeling, that there was just a knowing. And then I remember they asked me if I would speak. The priest had been there, the nuns had been there, and then they asked if I would talk to the parents. It was, you know, I went to the light, I went to this place, and it's beautiful, and again, I put it also, of course, because, as I said, I came from an evangelistic background and so forth,
sure.
But after all, they were obviously Roman Catholic, so they certainly understood and responded to that.
Oh, that's quite a story. All right, Brad, hold tight. It's the bottom of the hour. My guest is Brad's explanation of that NDE, that near-death experience. These such similar stories. Is it evidence that adds up to something? I think so. I really think so. And we will continue to pursue it for exactly that reason. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell, and this, of course, is Coast to Coast AM.
Dial area code 702-727-8499. That's area code 702-727-8499. Please limit faxes to one or two hotels.
It is. And speaking of the Kingdom of Nye, there's a pretty good photograph up there on the website's live studio cam right now. That fits the Kingdom of Nye. My guest is Brad Steiger, and he'll be right back right now. I want to tell you an amazing story, and a true one. Late last year, a most unbelievable discovery was made here in Nevada, my state. $20 U.S. gold pieces were found in a Wells Fargo bank here in Nevada. The size of the find was incredible. The quality of the coins, equally unbelievable. They were still covered with a fine coating of gold dust, which is typical of coins fresh from the mint. Rather well for coins which are just about 90 years old. Now calls North American Trading would be happy without cost and more information on these coins. The photographs are worth seeing, believe me. Just call 1-800-359-4255 and those photographs will be on the way, and we'll see if you're intrigued. That number again for North American Trading is 1-800-359-4255. All right, hang tight. All the lines are humming, of course, and we will get to the phones in due course. Brad Steiger is my guest, and here is a question for you, Brad. Dear Art, it says, is there a person with a very active imagination and life, and yet I've never experienced a ghost experience, a spiritual manifestation of some sort? Are there any public places that Brad might suggest where some sort of entity would likely drop by? Failing that, what could I offer as an invitation? That's from Ian in Tucson.
Well, so often I get quite the other query, of course. How do I get rid of it?
That's right.
There are people who are ghost magnets, you know, who seem to attract them. I'm just not the kind of person who believes in forcing these kinds of experiences. I know it is no consolation to someone who probably would secretly like an experience to say it will happen when the time is right, but as annoying as that might be to people, I really have to stand by that. I don't believe in putting yourself to where you might not be able to handle it. I think so often of the police officer who was with me, and when we saw a ghost materializing, he had given me such a bad time all day about believing in ghosts and so forth that I'm afraid I was began to materialize.
Maybe you ought to tell that whole story.
Well, that was, it's a very detailed story, but I'll just finish this and then I can go put it in context.
All right.
At any rate, the ghost began to form in front of us. I said, no, I don't see anything, because he had been riding me. Finally then, when it got solid, more solid, and he was about to pull out his police special, that's when I said, yes.
Really?
Then that was the only time I put my hand inside a ghost. I was putting it in dry ice. It was just very cold inside there.
Where were you, roughly?
Well, roughly, the place has now been destroyed. It was a mansion, a political figure. This was a place where you literally knock a call. And as in so many instances, it was through police that I was contacted, because the police had been brought out there. New stations. What would begin until quite recently, I'm going back in time now, so I'm from the perspective of 10 years ago, let's say, until quite recently when I was called in, two spinster sisters had lived in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mansion. It had stables. It had the complete works. It was a marvel. or the entity or the form would materialize to the west of the stables and then would walk across the lane and would walk into the house. And then you could see his glowing house, his daughters, who at that time were probably in their mid-80s and close to 90, would speak, and the police could hear from the outside. People in the area then had called. They were disturbed by these manifestations.
So that's how the police got involved.
That's how the police got involved. So the manifestations after the one then was taken to a nursing home, but the manifestations continued, of course. Permission to go through the place and to look at the situation, and as I say, then we came. We were there first. We arrived in the evening. We saw the glowing manifestation cross the lane. We decided not to go down cold. We came back and thoroughly investigated, did research, and then came back that night and saw the manifestation repeat itself. And as I say, so it's going to his firearm. Now, this manifestation continued. We returned. This is eerie. I returned with my chief investigator a year later, and we watched the same manifestation. And then, when we turned to go back to our automobile, somehow a pitchfork had materialized and driven itself right in front of our car.
Oh, bad.
There were a lot of strange spots, a lot of strange circles burnt into the ground. So there again, we have that UFO ghost connection.
Yeah.
And interesting, just before they tore it down, I heard two police officers had gone out there hearing the story and they going over it and having heard me talk, went out to see for themselves, and they admitted they came and they just burned rubber and got out of there. It's something, as they said very frankly, that wasn't covered in the police manuals.
I'm sure. You actually put your hand into this manifestation?
I thought it was a wonderful opportunity, and I couldn't resist. The manifestation was materializing, taking first it started as like swirling mist.
Yeah.
Then it acquired more body, and then it was kind of like a sparkling outline of a man. And I couldn't resist. I had to put my hand inside. And it was very cold. But I see here again, I guess I really felt it was some sort of repetitive pattern. I didn't fear, you know, that the ghost was going to grab me, then, you know, that sort of thing. I felt that.
Was this incident, Brad, before or after the incident that was really scary that you've told me about, where you were lifted off the ground?
This was just before. See, I hadn't had that experience.
I see, yes. I wanted to clarify that. Because having had the second experience, I doubt you would have done
that. When I said I put, and I was going to say, I hadn't had that experience yet. I didn't know if you remembered that or not.
I remembered that. I'll have you tell that story because a lot haven't heard it. But why do you think, and of course, when manifestations occur, even when you don't put your hand in them, there are many, many, many zillions of reports of cold spots. Why do you think the cold?
I don't know, but that, in my experience, that has been true. And when I am investigating, I always look for the cold spot. That seems to be a sure sign of a spirit presence, spirit manifestation, is the cold that comes. And certainly, as I said, it was like sticking my hand into a snowman or something. And in fact, that's pretty much the way it sounded. It felt, just a slip. There was really no sound. There was no sound with any of this. People claimed, several people there said they heard voices, but it was like a babble of voices. And I've heard that in haunted houses. We have that in the house we're living in currently, as a matter of fact.
What do you hear?
Voices speaking, not in a negative way. This is a very happy house. This is a small town. It seems like half the town has... and everyone loves it, and it's just a happy house. But we'll hear, I often, we'll hear a person talking, we'll say, or are you listening to the radio, or are you listening to television? No, I'm sitting here working. But you hear the sound of voices engaged. And those echoes of the past seem to be very common. I have heard, I don't see as often as I smell and hear.
You're good. I mean, I don't,
that's what it is to me. I certainly have never felt any threat in this house. And nothing again. As I say, it's a happy house, and the voices we hear sound happy. It's kind of like eavesdropping on people having happy conversations. But it does get deceptive when you think it's your spouse, or you know, you think you have company. And again, the sound of footsteps when you know you're all alone home is
that's not good. I mean,
no, I
wouldn't think of that as good. Even if it's happy footsteps, to me, would cause me to run for a gun.
Well, see, I grew up in a house with this kind of manifestation.
Yeah,
and
that's
I guess
true.
I had a beautiful, beautiful sign before the show. And I can't stop thinking about it. And if you'll I don't suggest that people go alone to these places. I have a friend with me who is one of the toughest. He was a Green Beret, he was Black Belt, he was everything.
Right.
And he, we were devoted to each other, and he was always with me. We always had police and others, but I always knew he was with me. And I guess I was kind of thinking about some of the experiences today, and on your advice, Sherry left to do errands. I'm getting a little emotional here, so forgive me.
Quite all right.
Pipes playing.
Pipes.
And my friend was Gotts, and we always were teasing each other. Since I am of Scandinavian background, he's a Scots, the traditional rivalry between the two. And I just knew it was he. When his wife told me he passed, I knew it. And that was just a beautiful sign to me, Art, that Glenn was still with. He said just before he died he would never leave me, it's a beautiful sign tonight that, you know, he's still there.
That is something. I wonder.
Here in Iowa, where we're living, you don't hear bagpipe music. I knew Sherry was out of the house, and I thought, there's no way, since she knows I'm trying to take a nap, that she would put on bagpipe music.
People from the other side to manifest either vocally or with some misty presence, or you know, in some rare cases, a very solid form.
I don't know. I've had mediums, you know, channel and say that they take ectoplasm, or they take it to his people at their value, and take that, you know, just as people who are human, giving human testimony that may or may not be true. Again, the theory that you and I said at the beginning, we feel comfortable with, that so much of this is just a pattern that somehow people of a certain sensitivity are able to activate. That's where you actually feel there's an intelligence involved, and sometimes a somewhat malevolent intelligence. So I don't know. I have been told, you know, that I unconsciously serve as a reservoir, a receptor, a channel for this. People say, oh, did you write that book all by yourself? Are you sure? From time to time, I have been aware of taking dictation, so to speak. I think in some of my more lasting and more profound ways, maybe this is where we get the concept of the muse, you know, the spirit that comes and inspires us. And I think there's some basic truth to that. That is a feminine aspect. Creativity, I think, is we need the masculine guiding aspect. We need the feminine creative aspect. So in a sense, we do objectify sometimes and personalize our creative self as a muse, as an entity.
Okay, it's really strange you should say that, because this book I've written, I wrote The Quickening.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's on the bestseller list.
Great.
New York Times bestseller list number 4 or something like that. Really incredible. It's amazing to me. Anyway,
It poured out, Brad. Mm-hmm. It poured out. And, you know, I had written a book previously to that, and it was real work. I mean, I had to sweat over it, autobiographical, and I sweated over it. So, but this book just poured out. Nevertheless, it didn't occur to me until fairly recently. Let me back up. I don't give a lot of credibility to channelers. I don't really like channelers.
I've heard from her.
You have?
Yes.
Okay, then you know. And I just, you know, there's something about it, and I'm not saying my sister's a fraud or anything
like
that.
Oh, no.
It's just too much room for fraud. I mean, I could sit here right now, and I could put on a little act, and I could come up with some voice that sounded a little different, and I could start to say things, and I could be fraudulent.
Right.
Too easy. Too much of a chance for fraud. And yet, when I think about the way that book was written, it gives me where all of it came from.
Let me just put some of channeling into a little different perspective for you, my friend, as individual shamanism. I think we all have shamanistic capacities. I think we all have the ability to channel, to reach our higher selves and get information. But again, we have to test it. And it is one of the problems with channeling. And again, I have many dear, wonderful people who channel messages to me or for me, and I say, thank you very much, you know, but this, maybe it isn't for me. You know, it's something that would even be contrary. This may have been for you. And it's the same way when you go on a vision quest. You may receive a vision that you are to share with the tribe, i.e. others in your community, or it may be a message strictly for you. So if you go on a vision quest and the higher self or the guide or the great spirit, whatever, says you must eat whale blubber, that may not apply to anyone other than you. Maybe you, your system needs what is in that whale blubber for that moment. And I sounds facetious, but I hope I'm making the point, is that so much of it is individualized and is not meant to be shared. And that's kind of the quarrel I have with this generic blanket channeling. I think it is an aspect of shamanism. I think we all have that ability. We call it creativity, or we call it our own guidance, or we call it the answer to prayer.
Well, of course, I want to believe, for probably egotistical reasons, that what's in that book came from me.
Sure.
And I'm trying to cling to that,
came,
you know.
It came through you.
But
however you want to say it, whether it was your muse, whether it was channeling, whether it was your brain, it came through you. And all the impressions that you have had as a sensitive observer, as a journalist, it all came together and just flowed when you finally, I mean, you talked about writing that book, you know, trying to burst out of you.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. But it was later, it was when I looked back on it and even reread it, and I sort of said, I kind of wonder if all of this sort of formed up elsewhere, and God forbid the word channeled through me. And I don't really believe that, and I don't want to believe that, but I have some suspicions about it.
And what does your sister say?
She hasn't made any comment on the book yet. I'm surprised. I had no idea you had heard from her. I'm surprised. She's a very, very,
very, very nice letter.
I'll be darned. The things you find out. When we come back, I'm going to return to a second to Egypt, because I've got a very, very interesting facts here from Milwaukee with regard to the disappearance of people from the king's chamber. How long has it been, Brad, since you were in Egypt? When was that?
Early 80s.
Well, I don't think that it's changed. They've done,
no, not that king's chamber.
No, they've done some digging in certain areas since then, but it's a very, very, very unusual place. Anyway, I'll read that fact when we get back.
Great.
So sit tight. You've got a pretty good break here, and we'll be back after the witching hour.
Terrific.
When, by the way, it will be the day before the day, Halloween. So carefully, the news may have news of the Asian markets. I'm Art Bell. This
Hi, rookie here for Kara Collision in Glass. Their telephone number, 444-0000, 444-0000. Now listen, did you... Minneapolis.
To talk with Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM from outside the U.S., first dial your access numbers to the USA, then dial 1-800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM from the Kingdom of Nye with Art Bell.
That's what it is. Good morning, everybody. My guest is Brad Steiger. So you're in for a real treat. If you're just joining us at this hour, buckle down. It should be a good one. Seems like I've got a couple of announcements that I'm supposed to be making tonight, and I... We will have Ghost to Ghost AM tomorrow night, and then possibly also heading into Friday night, Saturday morning, in view of the fact that Halloween officially, of course, is on Friday. Ghost to Ghost AM, for those of you that have never heard it, is a rendering of true ghost stories by all of you. And that is a night we do not have a guest. Perhaps a couple of nights in which we do not have a guest. And it is one of the more chilling things, I guarantee, you will ever hear, because so many people have experienced that which you're hearing about tonight from Brad Steiger. We'll get back to Brad in a moment. 11. That's 1-800-447-7911. All right, Brad, back now to Brad Steiger. And we were talking earlier about Egypt. As you know, I got an opportunity to lie in the sarcophagus in Egypt. And Brad told the story about a woman who had been on tour with him who had come up to the king's chamber as part of the group. This is kind of a strange story, folks. And she suddenly just... And, of course, as leader of the group, Brad, you know, I'm sure panicked severely. And they were calling the embassy husband back in the States that, you know, this woman had virtually disappeared from the king's chamber. It was a very odd story, and the end of it was that she was found about 2 weeks later, get this, living with a very nice Egyptian couple who had taken her in. Apparently had found her wandering on the streets, I would presume, of Cairo, which is adjacent to Giza, where the pyramids are and the Sphinx, and had taken her in, and this was 2 weeks later. And so somebody just faxed the following, and I want to read this to you, Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Art, great show. I have a comment about the woman disappearing from the king's chamber. I remember a previous guest talking about how when opened might allow the blowing wind to produce a particular resonant. Could it be that this is what the sound was, and that the woman was then, in effect, teleported somewhere, kind of like the Stargate nature of the Great Pyramid that has been alluded to by many? Maybe different, just different resonance. Brad says he assumes she ran out. Was she ever asked? That's from Dave in Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's a good response. It's a good... The sound... again, I'm, you know, a country boy from the plains, and I've heard wind howl in a lot of different directions and sounds, mournful, high, so forth. So this was quite unnecessary to try to analyze the sound, because we did get it on tape. We were... I traveled with the tape recorder. I was picking up street sounds, everything. I like to do that. And so the tape recorder picked up the strange manifestation, too. On it, as I said, at some years, I think, really, what probably happened was the emotionality and the tension of it became such that she probably could
ran out.
Yeah, could not, and somehow managed to run out of there and down, certainly capturing everyone's attention, and everyone's looking around. Where is it coming from? What is it? You know, what's going to happen next? So,
well, his question was she ever later asked her recollection?
That's the strange part. She didn't really. We, of course, were just overjoyed to find her.
Of course. I mean, 2 weeks, Brad, two weeks.
I think diplomatically, you know, people didn't push too hard. They said very, very succinctly, and we left it for her. Again, I don't have any sense of, you know, her being teleported or whatever, but whatever happened to her, it left her shattered for several days, and thank heaven and it was a very poor family who took her home. And living with them on that sort of basic level of human kindness and nurture, I think, probably brought her back. It'd be interesting, after all these years, what she would remember from it. At the time, her recollection seemed to be very jumbled and very hazy. It was a horrifying experience, and not knowing what had happened, those are the terrors, of course, of leading groups.
Yes.
In Peru, we had an astonishing situation there with spirits in Machu Picchu.
There's a place I want to visit.
Oh, it just was just delightful.
What is it about Machu Picchu? Danyan talks much about that as well. What is that place?
In May, I guess the subject didn't come up. And I hope he's feeling much better now.
And his blood count is all up and down, and they can't figure it out. He's going to specialists, but otherwise, the last clot in his brain is being absorbed, and he appears to be getting better.
Wonderful. Well, we're certainly holding him in our prayers, as I'm sure many people.
It's very subtle place. He's trying to talk me into going down there like crazy. What's there?
Well, I guess my totem animal is the canine, the wolf, the dog, and I had a dream vision just before horrible red-eyed creatures chasing us and then being saved by my totem animal, by dogs, by wolves. Now, this was an incredible experience. You mentioned going into the king's chamber late at night. Well, we managed to cross some palms with silver and were allowed to go to the ruins after everyone else was gone. Which we were uniting, we being the eagles from the north, connecting with the condor of the south. We had a local medicine man who was leading us, but he did not go on this particular evening. Sherry and I led a small group, one of which was a Los Angeles policeman, and I'm indicating that to show that there are all kinds and levels of people, all rational people.
Oh, yes.
We went to this one particular area deep in the heart of Machu Picchu, and we set up candles, and we're having a very beautiful little ceremony, little prayers and blessings, and all of a sudden, a wind came out of nowhere, blew all the Los Angeles policemen who saw very clearly and began to become very frightened of large entities, ancient entities. Once again, Art came over the entire group. It was cold. This wind came. And then from nowhere appears 4 dogs. And begin to bark and drive these entities back into the darkness. And I had, when I was a little boy, I had my bacon really saved. 2 dogs materialized and drove it away up a tree. And there were no such dogs around or in that area, and after that, they disappeared. So I feel strongly that my guardians and my guides can assume that form when necessary. But they drove the entities back. It was an incredible experience, absolutely incredible. I know the people, it was just maybe a dozen of us, those people, they still the fear of finding our way back out of the ruins. The flashlights, it was as if there again the energy was totally taken from them. It was very dark. We had, and I know everyone just kind of clung together in a line, but the dogs went all the way back to the main gate where they let tourists come in, and then they were gone.
It's interesting that you should mention a policeman, because I get literally every day emails. I get through them all. But without identifying anybody, which I would never do for their own protection.
Right.
I get a disproportionate number of emails and letters from law officers all across the country, mm-hmm. in cities all across the country,
mm-hmm.
who have had all kinds of strange paranormal experiences,
yes.
which they're willing to describe to me, but inevitably at the end, please, Art, you know, I've got a career, I really can't talk about this publicly. I've heard just about everything described, and they have a disproportionately large number of these experiences.
You know, I've been sending out a questionnaire since 1967, and law enforcement officers have just moved. I keep a percentage, you know, percentile rating of the different professions and occupations that contact me. And you're right. Either we are really gaining sensitive law enforcement officers, or they are becoming encouraged to speak out. And again, personally, you know, some of my very best friends, the dear friend I mentioned with the bagpipes was a former police officer before he became a private detective, and other police officers have always been primary areas, UFO areas, even flying me in certain places, you know, in planes and so forth. There's just an overwhelming number of police officers who have these experiences. I get remarkable stories, you know, about just knowing. I mean, picking up a bank robber or a thief, rather, before it's been called in, because they just drove past and knew that that man had robbed such and such a place,
well,
and having him already arrested before the report even comes in.
Then, too, though, they go as a matter of daily course to places of violence, great emotional disturbance. They go to places where all kinds of terrible things happen, and these tend to be the kinds of places that are haunted.
Absolutely. Law enforcement said he thought it was because, just what you were touching on there, Art, they are in situations of jeopardy that basic sense, the ESP sense in them for their survival, almost has to be stronger than in the average population. Or perhaps they've learned to rely on it.
Yep. Fight or flight thing, that adrenaline causes them to rely on that inner whatever it is that we have. Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly right. All right, here's another question for you. In the last show you did with me on the air, this listener says, please ask Brad the following. Don't Eastern religions consider reincarnation a curse in that it takes so many times or lives, if you will, to work off your sin? This is what I've learned. How does he contrast reincarnation with Christianity? Jesus told parables that indicated we die all through. It says, it is appointed for a man to die once, then the judgment.
Yeah, there are all kinds of, to get into the Bible quoting situation, which I never like to do, there are so many other passages which seem to indicate that. We have to remember Christianity is also an Eastern religion. And at the Council of 75, reincarnation lost by only 3 votes of being included. If it had passed, we wouldn't be having those questions today. So it
bothers me that there was a vote by human beings on the matter anyway.
Why, of course. Is where who do you say that I am? Well, they say you are Elijah returned. No, John the Baptist could have been Elijah. So again, playing the Bible verse game, I think it has built-in hazards. But I'll answer the first question. It's not that they consider karma or the wheel of return a curse, but in some aspects they do. When the child begins to speak of a past life, they discourage it because they feel one life at a time. If you entertain or encourage the memories of a past life, many Eastern religionists believe, it can become additionally stressful, which I think we would agree, and why, again, we don't encourage people, if they're doing it for therapy, if they're doing it for raising their soul evolution and insight and wisdom and awareness, but just for kicks, you know.
On balance, you think probably reincarnation is a fact, though?
Well, I think it is certainly one of the forms that survival after death may take.
All right. Brad Steiger, bottom of the hour. He's my guest. We will soon begin to take phone calls. We'll look for yours.
From east of the Rockies, 503. That's 1-800-825-5033. Now, here again is Art Bell.
Once again, I am here. Actually, I think the count is now around 139 published books. Many, if not most, on the paranormal. Things we talk about around Halloween. And frankly, a lot of other times. You're an expert in the area. I certainly do. Brad will be back in a moment. Now, back to Brad Steiger, and we are going to begin taking calls for Brad Steiger in just a few moments. Brad, this from Cassandra in Sacramento. I'm a junior in college, and I'm currently taking a death and dying class. I didn't know they had those.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what your guest stated about his NDE, we actually went over in class. My question he encountered in his career supported his NDE or told him anything different than what he experienced. And did they give him any description of the afterlife?
Well,
is it really?
I'm calling it Heaven is Our Home. My favorite hymn as a child was, I'm but a stranger here, heaven is not. It's all of our home, and I think that we are returning. So I've been collecting, and I'm eager to hear from anyone who's listening right now. Sherry and I will be working on this book, putting it together. If you have an afterlife experience, either through a near-death experience, through a vision, through a profound dream, through a contact with a loved one, we'd love to hear it, certainly. To answer her question, not to evade that, the descriptions of the afterlife have a consistency in terms of the near-death experience and a pattern, and since she's studying it, she's familiar with that, very often seeing the tunnels or being greeted by deceased loved ones or a light being, an angelic being, or a holy figure such as Jesus, Moses, Mary, depending upon your religious orientation. And then I think the whole key, selling treasures here on earth, I think that could be interpreted as we are collecting our experiences. The afterlife seems to be, and I think we touched on this earlier, Art, it seems to be an individual thing. We may bring, this is one theory or thought, we may bring our own experiences with us and in a sense create our own corner of heaven, our own aspect of heaven. Because of my near-death experience and the area, close personal friends, as well as, you know, I've written a number of books. I wrote the first book way back in the 60s. I call it The Mind Travelers. And then my one with the light, which came out 4 or 5 years ago, which has created a lot of attention in the near-death experience and sharing those. The unanimity, then, of the pattern that people go through. But the afterlife, it seems to be as though we collect our own treasures, our own experiences. And then there seems to be a time where there is a coming together. I'm also collecting memories or people who believe and feel strongly they have to coming into this lifetime again, not to this lifetime again, but I mean coming back into the earth plane again. These things the cynic and the skeptic can laugh away or can find alternate explanations, I suppose. But I think the belief of the afterlife, the belief that we are more than physical beings, that we are non-physical, multi-dimensional, I think is so strongly ingrained. And I think that some people, and I get this accusation, well, you're anti-science, and that is absolutely not true. Mm-hmm. I think materialistic science is what we, perhaps a lot of people object to. Materialistic, that it denies the non-physical aspect of our psyche. I think that's when people rebel. And certainly, I know many fine scientists who research and study and are, we have to say, belief, because there will never be the controlled, repeatable experience to satisfy the materialistic scientist.
Precisely.
But I think, again, the knowing, the noetic aspect of the afterlife and of the near-death experiences and the past life memories that people, it's to me that life does go on. Her question about entities and so forth, an infant person's question is in the reality of an afterlife. And then the afterlife varies from being a mirror image, but a more intensified, more vital image of our own world, to an idealistic paradise, and we find that sort of in the Muslim, the Jewish, and the Christian faith. Others, have the different levels of heaven and so forth. So it's a fascinating study, and I certainly would love to hear from anyone who would like to contribute to it.
All right. In the spirit of that, then, how does somebody write a letter to you or send email to you or somehow communicate with you?
To Post Office Box 434, Forest, and that's like a group of trees, so one R, Forest City, Iowa, 50436. And I would love to send people a questionnaire if they like. Please include a stamp self-addressed. I'll send you a book list, a questionnaire, the questionnaire I referred to that I've been sending out since 1966 to now roughly 30,000 people.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and getting some fabulous statistics. And also, since we last spoke, Art, I now have an 800 number where people can order the books.
Oh, you do?
I know when I told you before that I was going to start handling them, and you said, oh, are you sure you want to
That's
do
right.
That? And I found out I just don't have time to be running a mail order business. But I have someone who will do it for us.
I see.
And any of the books, the one with the light I mentioned, or our Awful Thing in the Attic, or any of our angel books, or whatever, people can acquire directly from 800-862-2923.
Okay. Is that a 24-hour number or during the day?
I think it's primarily during the day.
All right. So let me roll over all this and see if I've got it right. If they want to get your questionnaire and be part of this, I'm really glad you're doing this. Brad Steiger, Box 434, Forest City, Iowa, 50436.
Mm-hmm.
And the book ordering number, 1-800-862-2923.
Right.
Remember the facts we got earlier from what I discerned to be a fundamentalist that talked about your nervous laugh. You remember that?
Right.
I've got another fax here. I've got to say, Art, this is from Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to say, Art, that Brad Steiger, from what I've seen of him on tape, heard from him on radio, and gleaned through his writings, is a bright, distinguished, centered gentleman, in the real sense of the word, that his laugh is the laugh of a man who is relaxed and knows himself. He definitely is someone to pay attention to. I think it was the faxer who was nervous. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that may be exactly the case. As you talk of this sort of thing, and you talk to a fundamentalist, or a fundamentalist listens, it produces a kind of nervous reaction that, if allowed to continue, can turn into outright anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You notice that?
Well, I certainly thank the recent faxer for the kind words. One thing I never do, Art, is argue religion or politics. And I had practical experience with that. You see, in our family, we are split right down the middle. Half are Protestant, half are Roman Catholic, half are Democrats, and half are Republicans.
Oh, boy.
Now, we've never had an argument at a family gathering because it's understood those are two topics that are never discussed.
Politics, different reasons. It just seems to me that an awful lot of what's going on politically now is just for American people, and there's a lot of people that agree with that. Let's take a few phone calls, and I've got a lot of other faxes. Just a lot of people want to talk to you.
Great.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Brad.
Where are you, sir?
This is John, and I'm in Bend, Oregon.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to call and clear up something that you had mentioned to Brad, Art, and I felt his answer to it was a little bit evasive, which is typical. I know you're not a religious show, but last few nights I've been listening. There's been lots, starting with, I think it was Harlot or Patsy, whatever.
That's right.
There's been a lot of religious talk.
That's right.
Well, you'd mentioned that the Bible states that to die
yes.
in the judgment.
Yes, that was a fact.
Yeah, and that's true. That's what the Bible says. Yeah. That's statements that, you know, you can quote Bibles with.
And he's right. There are
no statement or quote in the Bible from Jesus or any other source that wrote the Bible that upholds reincarnation in any way. The quote he quoted was when, you know, Jesus says, well, who do you say I am? And they say, well, some say you're Elijah. Elijah never died. Elijah was taken up by God and straight to heaven. He never died physically, and he's the only one.
Now, you aren't taking any of that on faith, are you?
I'm taking it all on the fact that the Bible is written, and of course I take it all on faith. Cause
okay. And the Bible is the fact.
Well, yeah, it is. It's, after all, all religion.
That's another point of view, then, could they?
You can have another point of view. It doesn't make it right.
But no, that's right. It wouldn't be a correct point of view in your eyes.
Well, there's only one correct because there's only one truth. If you have many truths, no matter how many people you have, then you have no truth. Because,
well, from your point of view, you are always right, and you're always going to win, and God bless you.
And there is no arguing.
There's no arguing with you. There's no discussion
just,
with you.
You know, you can argue all you want, but that
I never argue.
Don't make you
I
wrong.
Never argue. You heard me say I never argue.
No, you just did. And that's another thing, you know. Usually when I hear people say that, because I was brought up with parents who said, oh, you never argue religion or politics. Well, people that are unwilling to argue religion or politics are people that are unsure. They're afraid that someone might convince them otherwise.
Maybe it's pointless to argue with someone.
A better caller might be that you're the one attempting here to promote, in effect, an argument. And to me, that would indicate that internally, your own beliefs are challenged.
No, not my own beliefs are challenged. I promote an argument because argument is discourse. An argument is the only way that opposing ideas
discussion
so everybody can
works.
Make their own choice.
Yeah,
discussion works,
that's
but
right.
arguments never work.
That's right. No, I absolutely agree with that, and because of his own insecurities, he's trying to convince himself. If he was truly absolutely convinced and had rock solid faith, he wouldn't even pick up the phone.
I would agree with that, but then that's our opinion.
That's exactly right. All right, Wally, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good. My name's Alan. I'm from Central Ohio.
Yes, sir.
A question for Brad. Supernatural experiences, spirits, if you would. From growing up, I grew up in a very old home that was, at one time, was in the small town I was from. He was a practicing physician. The house My parents bought in the early 50s. I have four other brothers that we grew up in, and an alcoholic at the time, and a pretty violent one, as far as busting up the house, coming home drunk and late. The thing was, there was a lot of activity in this house. The house has six bedrooms, upstairs with two bathrooms. Downstairs was his actual practicing room with a preparation kitchen because people stayed there, mostly elderly. They would visit the doctor. He would tend to them, and quite a few had passed away in the house. Mm-hmm. The main porch had four doors going into it. Where you would see the receptionist, go in and wait, and go into the doctor's room, which eventually turned into my parents' main bedroom downstairs. The two doors were identical, very strong oak wood, a lot of glass in it. The one rattled, very loose painted glass. I mean, if you walk through the house on the wood floors, my father was a very big man, this was always going on. The constant doorknob turning, many occasions, we would be sitting and we'd hear my dad beller out, "Wait a minute, I'm in a John, give me a minute." And somebody would literally be turning a doorknob and nobody would be upstairs. Another occasion, what happened with my girlfriend, which is now my wife, we were upstairs getting some heavy petting, pretty late at night. Don't want to get into that. And a very, very thunderous, it sounded like somebody dropped a barbell set with a couple hundred pounds of weights in it, shook the entire house. My mom met me halfway up the stairs with my girlfriend. We were decent. And she's like, "What are you kids doing?" She thought the bed had busted down. We were horsing around. Oh, boy. And I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And we looked and looked. Nothing was out of place. I'm asking now because my parents moved to Florida. My older brother lives in the house now with two other boys. There's no activities now. Mm-hmm. There's no... my brother knew what was going on in the house. He grew up there. He heard the footsteps. He's seen the occasional glancing of somebody in a mirror at you.
Mm-hmm.
I was always scared because I never had a mirror in my bedroom.
So in other words, the haunting ended when you left.
Yeah, well, sure it did. I mean, I wasn't in the house anymore. Neither were my other brothers.
But it's not going on with your brother still living there.
No, but I'm wondering, could it have been channeled in because of my father's violent background, his alcoholism in the house?
Yeah.
Channel in entities or happenings?
You may have heard earlier someone called in and said they would like to have a haunting experience.
Mm.
Were you listening then?
I
think one of the things, an area that is loaded with this type of phenomenon is an old hospital, or as you say, a doctor's office, where people have died, where people have been ill. There's something about the emotions of pain, fear, that linger, and as we said, you know, somehow we don't understand it yet, perhaps we will someday, and can tune into it just like we can into a CD or a cassette. But somehow the atmosphere becomes so charged in those areas. And then one thing, I mean, I found this in many, many haunting situations.
We'll have to pick up
the alcoholic father. Again, that could definitely set things in motion.
All right. We'll be right back.
It's the sun.
In the Kingdom of Nye, from east of the Rockies, dial 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, call Art at 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, dial Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Now again, here's Art.
Well, I just had one. I just had an experience that scared the hell out of me. Coming out of this last break, as I was, as I was rolling the bumper music going into this last break, I took my headphones off. I have a headset that I use. And I started to turn around, and there was a sharp bang. I mean, it's like somebody banged my door, you know, like, boom, like that. And I went, whoa. And I quickly opened the door, and there was absolutely nobody there. And so I went into the other room and woke up Ramona and asked her if she had just done something. And she came out asleep and said, no, I'm asleep. And I looked at my three cats, the only other possibility, and they were all soundly asleep on the bed with her. So I don't know what it was. Maybe it was a gigantic creak, but I have never, ever, ever experienced anything like that in here before. That scared the hell out of me. I mean, it wasn't a discreet little boom. It wasn't like an airplane producing, you know, a sound barrier break, that kind of thing. It was on my door, and it was a gigantic bang, and I didn't like it at all. But that shows you what happens when you start getting in these moods. Brad Steiger is my guest, and we'll get back to him in a moment. When it comes to information on ETs, if you're like me, you can't get enough. I'm telling you, you have got to see the spine-chilling video, Area 51, the alien interview. Thousands of my listeners have already ordered this 65-minute documentary containing the most convincing color footage of government agents interviewing a space alien inside the infamous secret base at Area 51. Man, the entire version, which you're surely going to want to see again and again and again, it's finally available, and here's how to get it. Call 1-800-510-3420. It's just $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and again, it's 65 minutes long. 1-800-510-3420. All right. Back now to Brad Steiger. Brad, are you there?
Yes.
I don't know if you were on the phone. Did you happen to hear what I just said?
Yes.
That scared the hell out of me. And it brought to mind, I mean, that was a sharp bang on my door, and there was nobody around to make it. And I went and checked, and I locked both doors, double locked. But it really, really scared me, Brad. And I kind of wonder, you know, you described earlier encountering an entity and taking your hand and putting it into the middle of the entity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, based on what I just experienced, now I haven't had a lot of these. This is pretty unusual for me. If there was something that manifested before me, the last thing in the entire world that I would do would be to put my hand into the entity. What I think I would probably do is let my feet take me as fast as they could in the opposite direction, just based on how scared I got over that crash on my door.
Yeah, but you see, I'm like a botanist, and I've just heard this rare flower is blooming, and it only blooms for a minute every 100 years. Well, I want to be there. Well, this is that kind of opportunity for me, you see.
Huh.
Now, the bang, was it anything like our friend in Ohio described, as like a big weight falling to the floor?
It was exactly the way I just made the noise on my table. It was just like this, Brad. I'm not kidding. I took my headphones off.
Mm-hmm.
I started to turn around, and on my door it went like that.
Yeah.
And I said, what the hell? And I was sure it was Ramona, and so I went,
yeah,
and I woke the poor lady up.
Now, you might remember one time I was talking about working with someone who had poltergeist phenomena.
Yeah.
And you said one of your commercials is we're all electric things. Well, we are electromagnetic things. And you remember I described how that poltergeist followed the telephone line all the way from where they were to where I was and began tearing up my office. This is an electromagnetic... certainly one facet of it is electromagnetic. What our friend in Ohio was describing, and we just started to get into it when the commercial came, the break came. Again, his father was a big man.
Yes.
They were children.
Yes.
The fact that he was alcoholic. one may assume that he went into rages, or maybe he accused them of different things, or he was argumentative.
Sure.
And contrary to one of our callers, arguments do not really bring about harmony. They shatter the harmony. So here's the emotions that would trigger explosions within that family, within that home. Those dormant emotions of pain and suffering and illness from the doctor's office would be activated in a way we don't understand, but somehow then, yes, it became contagious. The activities that went on in that office. So those echoes of former pain and discomfort were activated by his father's alcoholic condition. Earlier I said that's why I'm so really try to be firm in talking to young people about alcohol abuse and drug abuse. That's when the spiritual parasites can really get in there. Well, in this particular case, it just served as a focus. It just served as a conduit for all these past emotions to enter in, which do somehow, in some cases, sound like explosions. I've been in numerous haunting situations where there's just a bang, there's just a crack, almost like thunder or lightning, and it's almost as if it's coming from one dimension into another. It's like breaking the sound barrier, to use an analogy, as it comes in. So again, when the father moved away, when he moved away, and probably the brother, let's hope then, is a balanced person, probably with the example of his father, maybe he doesn't drink, and there's harmony once again there.
Well, all I know is that bang scared the hell out of me.
Yeah.
All right, listen, here's something from a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Pastor Bradley, who's a listener to this program and chimes in from time to time. Dear Art, I'm a born-again Christian. I've had a near-death experience as well as other paranormal experiences. I found what Brad was saying about alcohol and drug abuse very interesting. I've been saying this very thing myself for quite a few years now. I don't agree with everything that he says, but I do find it very interesting. And so he's going to send you information on his NDE. I mean, this is a pastor.
I'd love to see it.
And it's on the way. So he agrees with you regarding drug and alcohol abuse and that sort of thing. And then I have one other comment on the Bible, and I'm not trying to bring it back to that point, but one thing, and this is, we've talked about it on the show over the last couple of days. I've always had this problem with organized religion, Brad, and the fact that we, according to most organized religions, are supposed to have this great fear of God. To me, it doesn't seem like God is supposed to be a fearful character.
Mm-hmm. No, to me, Jesus speaks of the God of love, and that's
not
the God that I feel obeisance to.
Yeah, there you are.
The attitude of the pastor, again, as I said, I don't know why it's always so confusing for people to comprehend this. In my own family, you know, we have many born-again Christians. We have harmony because we respect each other as individuals and recognize that we can differ on certain points. If there was unanimity, I mean, how many sects of the Christian church are there in the United States? I mean, there are hundreds.
Sure.
If there was one Christian faith, you know, but there isn't, which indicates that even in the most devout traditionally religious people, there are different points of view. So I think if we can practice love and respect for one another, and like I say, see the face of God in everyone, then these... the one caller who said, well, that was cowardly in our family not to discuss, or to argue. We discuss, but it's pointless to try to convince a rock that it's a raindrop.
That's right.
Now, if that drop of rain can form ice or can evaporate, is willing to explore other forms, but when someone is totally rock set, it is a waste of time to argue. You can only say, that is your truth. I respect your truth. I'm happy for you that you feel fulfilled in your truth. But it may not be totally my truth. The pastor who said he agrees maybe on one thing, not on another. Wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
That's an open mind. Here's something that I think will surprise you. For those who thought Brad was telling a story about Egypt, listen to this, Brad. Dear Art, I can verify what Brad said about the girl disappearing from the king's chamber. as I was on the tour with him.
Ah.
As a matter of fact, it was my tour company, Joy Tours International.
Yes, 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 yes.
As he said, we later found out that this woman became apparently overwhelmed and emotionally distraught and slipped out unnoticed and disappeared into the desert to be rescued by an Egyptian family.
Mm-hmm.
The sound that Brad described was truly phenomenal. It
mm-hmm.
began as Brad touched the finger of another tour member and would vary in intensity and pitch as the sound passed finger to finger around the room. It made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. I've been in the King's Chamber over 20 times. This was the only time anything like this ever happened. Tell Brad hello. Joy in Phoenix.
Oh, Joy, it's so great to hear from you again. And thanks for calling in and verifying, and I hope your life is as blessed as the wonderful person you are. She's a marvelous tour guide and just a very, very spiritual person.
That is an amazing story.
Well, there were so many things that happened. I don't even know if Joy knows this. I went back to my hotel room one time, and I opened the door, and I thought I was in a strange room. There was a, obviously, judging by certain physical characteristics, an Egyptian woman, or at least a Mideastern woman. And I opened the door, and she was so angry, and I said, I apologize, I'm sorry, I'm terribly sorry. I must have the wrong room, but I thought, you know, I have my key. And then the woman disappeared before my eyes.
Really?
So again, I walked in at the wrong time in one dimension, I guess.
Well, you know, Brad, these are civilizations, as you well know from having been to Egypt, that are far older than ours. And if the presence of human beings in civilizations, you know, for hundreds or thousands of years in this case, even before Christ, if their presence and their absence as we come and go as mortal beings generates these spirits and these things, then these very ancient civilizations, you might imagine, would have more paranormal occurrences than we have.
Yeah, I think there was something about the focus of the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, on life after death. I suppose almost more than any other philosophy, our concepts of life after death are influenced by the ancient Egyptians in subtle ways that a lot of people just refuse to recognize. And I remember when Joy proposed going to Egypt, my first reaction was, the Egypt I love is the Egypt that's no longer there. And it took some convincing on her part. And then after I got there, I thought, but that Egypt is still here.
Yeah.
It is still here. Time, space, there's something, Art, I know you and Ramona must have experienced this. There's a timelessness there.
I know. The Egyptians were the first that we know of that appeared to understand something about an afterlife
mm-hmm.
that we still have not grasped in modern times. No, there's no question about
it. No question about it.
Okay. First time caller line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning.
Howdy.
Howdy. You're going to have to speak up good and loud for us, sir. Where are you?
I am from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Wow. Where? Way up there.
Oh, yeah.
North to Alaska.
I had a couple questions. Now, Mr. Bell, that noise on your door may have been, I don't know, did you check out the detail on the front of it?
Did I do what?
Check out the detail on your door. Somebody may have thrown something at it, you know, as a prank or something.
You know what? I haven't looked now that you mention it, but it was just, you know, there was no question about it. We're not talking about a, you know, you get bangs sometimes that rattle the house or something like that. It wasn't the house. It was the door, and it wasn't a knock or a crack or a creak. This was a boom, and it scared the heck out of me.
Yeah, I'd look for rocks anywhere around your porch or
okay.
like that. But now, what is this guy's name again?
This guy's name is Brad Steiger.
All right, sorry about that. Brad, this spiritual entity that came up to you and grabbed your hand and put it inside of himself? Or
no, you
no, 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 no,
no, no.
I put my hand inside of it.
Oh, okay. Did you feel it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It made my hand tingle. It was ice cold. It was tingly.
Ooh, okay. Also, another question. Are you a Roman Catholic?
Am I?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Because I heard you talk something about that, you know. And I was just kind
of... No, I said I was brought to a Roman Catholic hospital.
Oh, okay.
In my near-death experience, and my ministry, so to speak, began in the hospital when the nuns asked me to testify or to help the grieving parents at the deathbed side of their daughter.
Oh, okay, because I was kind of wondering, because I was, kind of wanting to know a couple things, you know, about the biblical things about the abominable church sitting upon seven hills and
Must be talking about the Vatican, huh?
You're talking in the Book of Revelation.
Yeah, also about the guy with the mark of the beast upon his brow,
mm-hmm.
The Catholic Church in Rome sits upon seven hills.
Yep, there you are. Okay. Well, I don't know what to say about that. I was at the Vatican here a couple of weeks ago, and it didn't seem too abominable to me.
No.
As a matter of fact, I actually got to see the Pope. It was really incredible.
Yes, incredible.
I walked in, Brad.
He's probably a fan.
I walked in, and here is this giant crowd. I mean, as we walked in to the Vatican, there's this giant crowd, and we turn around and ask somebody, what's going on? And they said, you mean you don't know? The Pope's coming out in 5 minutes. That's luck. A wild card line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Hi. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Jan.
Hi, Jan. Where are you?
Hi, Jan.
I'm in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And last November, I died of cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And because I lived close to Valley Hospital, they were able to revive me.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got me to the hospital, they did a brain scan. And I was brain dead. That was the diagnosis.
Wow. Oh, my.
Yeah, apparently you have to have a score of such and such in order for you to have enough brain activity to operate your body. I was even below that threshold.
Gee.
And
wow,
showing all of the physical attributes of being brain dead as well.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So... of course, I was in a coma. The prognosis was that I would never come out of a coma. They were talking already on the fourth day, might as well pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, being the master of interruption, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Jan,
not now, Art.
Oh, yes, now. But we're going to hold Jan on the line, okay, Jan?
Mm, that's fine.
It's a perfect we hang them up place. Ready to pull the plug? A dead brain scan? And Jan's here talking to us. This bears listening to, and so we shall when we return from the break. I'm going to look for rocks. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Brad Steiger, and we'll be right back.
From west of the Rockies, including Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, dial 1-800-618-8255. That's 1-800-618-8255. Now again, here's Art.
I hope it's the age of Aquarius. No marks on the doors, no rocks, no explanation. You know how I said it was so much fun to be scared? I may be revising that opinion. Anytime now.
Oh, boy. Back to Brad and company in a moment. And tell them Art Bell told you to call.
Well, all right. Right now, I'm sorry for the interruption, though it was a good way to hang you all up for a few minutes. Brad, we're back on the air, and ma'am, you're back on the air. And to recap, you had an NDE for sure. You had brain death?
Well, yeah, it was a cardiac arrest. And so, of course, when you have a cardiac arrest, you're just like immediately dead.
How old are you, Jan?
At the time, I was 43. I'm 44.
So very young, then.
Yeah.
To have that.
Yeah. And so apparently, I think they took the time from when the 911 call came in to the time that the medics arrived, and it was like over 9 minutes, and you're brain dead after six or something like that.
Yeah.
So when they got me to the hospital, they didn't even take me to cardiac. They took me to immediately for the brain scan.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like I said, came out and told my boyfriend and my roommate that I was brain dead.
Mm.
So my family flew in, family members flew in, and like I said, about day four, they're going, gosh, you know, it might as well pull the plug. Even if she ever comes out of the coma, she'll never come off a respirator.
Be a vegetable.
I'm a vegetable. Mm. Right. Now, interestingly enough, because I was single, it's still up to my parents to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of on the phone with my poor parents at that point. When I came out of the coma, the neurologist came in. They started asking me questions like, what's your name?
Mm.
I told them my name. They just couldn't believe that. Count. You know, forwards, count backwards, do math. You know, they had me doing math. I could do everything.
Mm.
And the neurologist just threw up their hands and said, it's a miracle. Right. I mean, there was no way medical science could call it anything but. But what was interesting is, as I was coming in and out that first day out of the coma, I was telling them different things that had happened to me. Either it was during that time I was dead, and then probably also during the time I was in the coma. And one of the things I told Diana was, she said, well, you know, what were you, you know, can you remember anything about what you were doing when you were in the coma?
Right.
And I said, I was listening to Art Bell.
You're kidding.
No, that's why I just thought you were talking near death. And I had honestly, Art, never listened to your program.
What?
I was aware of you just because I'm in the Las Vegas area.
God.
And a friend of mine from Montana, back, gosh, it must have been a year or more ago, you had a creature. There was a picture of a creature on your net site.
That's right.
And a friend of mine from Montana called and said, you got to look this creature up. You know, hit artbell.com and, you know, go to this creature thing. And so I did. But that was the only time that I'd had any contact with you. And like I said, I'd never heard your radio program.
And you came out of a coma and they asked you and you said you'd been listening to Art Bell.
Listening to Art Bell. I am not pulling your leg.
Interesting.
And,
now, did you have any memory? Did you...
No. Now, the things that I did recall, I had a near-death experience when I was 27. I was anesthetized
mm-hmm.
for the first and last time.
Mm-hmm.
I had an allergic reaction to anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
That time, I went out of body, and I watched them do the code blue, and which was pretty interesting. When they put the paddles on me, your body flops around.
So you were like in a corner of the room looking down?
Well, actually, I was above, and I was looking down.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
a real strange feeling, and I felt kind of silly about watching my body sort of flopping around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That time, you know, I watched them do the code blue or whatever they do. They couldn't get my heart started. The anesthesiologist came in, said it was an allergic reaction to the muscle relaxant. You know, they put cause of death, allergic reaction to muscle relaxant.
Mm-hmm.
And that time when I... And like you said, I was very calm. I had I understood completely I was dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really had no fear. I was totally calm. I briefly felt regret that my young son would grow up without mm-hmm. a mother. I felt sorry for my husband who was going to have to hear the bad news mm-hmm. you know, at the time. But other than that, I was really okay about it.
Did you see a design geometric or anything?
I don't recall that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't,
or a light beam.
Didn't go as far as the light or any of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now this time, and it's interesting because I have visited with a woman just by chance out of Arizona, has a publishing company there, that she had had more than one near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had called on some business and they said, oh, she died of a cardiac, but, you know, she came back. So she mm-hmm. called up and said, wow, I've been there twice.
Mm-hmm.
She went out of body her first time and she did in her second.
Huh.
She had that same, you know, and the only way she could explain is, well, maybe just go to the next level of it quicker, or you don't go through that, or I don't know.
All right, well, this is quite remarkable, and I think you should be communicating this to Brad.
Yes, I hope you will send, either put it on cassette or
yeah.
type it up if you can. We'd just love to have that for the
right.
files. It's really a remarkable case.
Yeah.
All right. Did you get my address earlier?
No, I didn't.
Okay, no problem.
Okay.
Do you have a pencil?
Sure.
All right, Brad?
The post office box 434.
Uh-huh.
Forest, like a group of trees, Forest City, Iowa, IA,
uh-huh.
50436.
Okay.
And anyone else listening who has had similar experience, we'd just mm-hmm. really love to receive it.
Mm-hmm. The one place I did go this time was a place that kind of just went into infinity. It like cut glass sort of in mosaics, but it gave you the sense of this just going on into infinity.
No, that could be similar to what I was describing.
Uh-huh.
As I said, have you ever seen fractal geometry?
Yeah.
What's it called? There's a clothing design. Or you sometimes see something on Turkey's rugs. Sometimes you see paisley prints where it kind of swirls around.
Well, this is more like a clear glass, but cut into
crystals. Okay, that's often described too.
Yeah, but set into patterns that, you know, like if it was a flat glass, you would think it was stained glass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like that, only it's not flat glass and it's not colored. It's like I said, multifaceted.
So well, I know it's hard to put into words, but I think the more you're talking, the more it sounds
yeah.
like what I saw and what others have described.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really brilliant. And I was aware that there were beams of light. You could see them almost as sharp as like laser beams
mm-hmm.
of this bright light coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was aware that that was communications.
Mm-hmm.
And then it suddenly occurred to me, well, this is what we call prayer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I could discern what, you know, which ones were coming in on my behalf,
mm-hmm.
which was interesting.
Interesting.
All right.
People say, well, did you meet people or talk to people? I said, no. But I was...
But in a sense, you had an awareness of it.
I was very aware, and it's interesting because when you're here, your thoughts are private.
Mm-hmm.
When you're there, because you're not communicating with language or anything, and you're communicating with thought,
and you're in
kind
an
of odd feeling because you're thinking, and everything you're thinking, you're aware that it's communicating.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found interesting was I was aware also that I was brain dead. And I was communicating that. I was aware that I was brain dead.
Yeah, because I was looking down on this battered, bloody little 11-year-old boy when I was floating
right.
up there. And,
so
and I was aware that, you know,
right.
he probably wasn't going to make it.
Right. And so I specifically communicated that I wanted to come back, but that I also wanted my brain back.
Mm-hmm.
And that I wanted all the memories and all the intellect and everything that was on the tape.
That's astounding.
That's very
yeah.
interesting.
Right.
All right, please then, okay. Write this, or if it's easier for you, put it on a cassette tape. Sometimes it's easier to render something like this up on cassette.
Right, right.
And please get it to Brad, all right?
Okay.
All right.
Really appreciate it, Jen. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for the call. Well, that...
Great case. Great case.
And she actually requested...
Yeah.
To get her faculties back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She actually knew she was brain dead.
Right, that's a very interesting case.
Woof.
And she told it so, both in an articulate and a very calm and matter-of-fact way.
I know. I sat here listening to the two of you, almost feeling left out. But I, you know, I don't necessarily wish to have a near-death experience. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning.
Yes, sir. This is Richard.
Where are you, Richard?
I'm in Houston.
All right.
Hi, Richard.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed the show. And, Brad, I'll tell you, I'd love to meet you.
Well, maybe that'll happen one day.
Yeah, I hope so. When I was 14, my mother died of cancer. And my dad was an alcoholic, and I just, you know, thought it was the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I slipped the gun out of the house and went to the woods, and I was going to commit suicide.
Uh-oh, uh-oh.
And I'll never forget it, you know, and I'm a born-again Christian, and anyway, I was sitting there on the tree and had my finger on the trigger, had the shell in the chamber, and this blue light. I mean, this is in broad daylight. This blue light just come, and all I could see was an image of a veil, just a snow-white veil.
Oh, Richard, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and I tried to pull the trigger, and the gun wouldn't fire.
Wow.
That is...
And then I heard this voice tell me that my mother was in a better place, you know, and that things would be all right. And they have. I give my life to Christ just a couple of days after that, and I've been a Christian the whole time. I just turned 59.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've talked about the blue light, and, I've heard other people talk about that, so I firmly believe it was an angel.
Well, the blue light came to me and gave me the book Revelation, the Divine Fire, that I wrote, which is about the revelatory experience and experiences like you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And the story that the lady just told about Art Bell, she was listening to Art Bell when she was in a coma, but she'd never listened to him in reality.
Yeah.
I've had more people say that during surgery or anesthesia, they were shown the cover of the book Revelation, Divine Fire, and told to read it. And again, I have only their testimony, but these are total strangers to me who wrote and said that's when it came to them. So that blue light, I agree with you, Richard, that is an angel of the Lord and bringing light. And God bless you for sharing. That's a wonderful story.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Suicide. Suicide.
No, that's a tough one. Sherry was suicide counselor for many, many years and just kind of burned out on it. She's such a loving, sensitive person, and she had to deal with that, you know, handling the crisis line and so forth. That is such a tough one. Again, judge not, but life is so precious.
And short.
And short.
I think we may have talked of this before. I'm not sure. My wife modified my own views on suicide. I always maintained stoically that if I had some sort of fatal disease, rather than go through the pain, I wouldn't hesitate to take my life. You know, toward the end stages,
yeah.
I wouldn't. I saw no reason for people to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And Ramona said, "No, That isn't the way it's supposed to happen. You've got to play the hand out that you were dealt, and if you don't play it out, you're going to end up playing it out later again in some other way."
Yeah. Well, that's
and
my
that
philosophy.
Made so, you know, it made so much sense to me, Brad, that it slowly changed my view on the whole thing.
That's my philosophy too, but again, judge not, because you know you can never truly judge another person's pain.
That's for sure. But I wonder spiritually, you know, when we're talking about spirits and we're talking about ghosts and we're talking about things that remain, whether suicide is such a traumatic end
that it frequently causes the kind of things that we've been talking about?
Suicide and murder, certainly in my experience, are at the basis of the majority of hauntings that I've investigated. Mm. In one home, the family would see the reenactment of the murder. Probably once a month, they would see a man. It was from what we could piece together, a man, his mistress. The man murders his wife while the mistress is looking on. And that evil tableau was played out for them repeatedly. By the time we got to this, and this was an old lumber baron's home, the family was living in like three rooms out of like a 25-room house because the house was just infested with evil. It's a house that I've seen the experiences that we had in that house. I must say, I've seen in my dreams several times. I know there was something happened there. We made contact with something there that still left kind of a seed in my psyche that I have to kind of replay and exorcise from time to time.
Do you have nightmares?
No. When I was a young boy, I developed the facility of stepping outside of my dreams.
Really?
I suffered from nightmares as a young boy, and then suddenly I stopped. I remember the Frankenstein monster, other hideous beings were closing in on me. And, of course, the traditional, I had a gun, but it wouldn't fire. And all of a sudden, I stopped, and I was probably, judging by where we were living, I was probably 8 or 9 years old. And I said, hey, wait, this is my dream. And the monsters all said, yes, this is just a play we're enacting.
Huh.
I said, okay, then, from now on, when I pull the trigger, since it is just a play, you fall over. They said, right, because it is your dream.
You're kidding.
No. So from the age of 9, I mean, that was... So whenever I approach the area where I might be, I just say, I step out of it and say, this is my dream. I'll watch it to see what I will learn from it, what I will gain from it. And certainly I've written chapters, I've written everything in this particular state because I use the dream state.
I would like to learn how to do that because I live my dreams as, in fact, as I wake up, I have to assure myself that it wasn't real, you know, as in the waking up process. And I would love to be able to learn how to live outside a dream and watch it dispassionately.
For creativity, it's just, when I was taking confirmation class and I was confirmed Lutheran and we had to practically memorize the Bible and the teachings of Martin Luther and so forth and
yes.
be able to recite them,
yes.
I would read it once or twice, Art, and then I would go to sleep and then I would continue, but the other part of me would continue to go over it so that the next morning, Saturday morning for confirmation class, I had it down cold.
I did the same thing in college with my tests and so forth. I bet you didn't know. I'm Lutheran also.
Oh, really?
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
But I would really, really, really love to learn because though I don't dream frequently, when I do, it's very intense and very real, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just love to be able to disconnect from that and enjoy it at some different level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tried to put a tape together to teach people how to do it. It's something maybe if I were working in a workshop or something, and we really had the time to go into a relaxing state and so forth. It's easy for me to say it, but it's hard, you know, for people then to practice it. It was just something that, because I used to have terrible nightmares as a small child, and this one night I just stopped and said, hey, wait. Whose dream is this? And the monsters all agreed. It was my dream. So it's been a marvelous release for me. I mean, when I'm stressful and I'm like Billy Jack, I'll go in and clean out a saloon full of bad guys, you know, just to release tension.
Well, I'm going to work on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a talk with my monsters if I can manage it.
Yeah.
God, I love it.
Whose dream is it anyway?
That's right. You'll fall down when I shoot. I love it. All right, Brad, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour. Brad Steiger is my guest, author of 139 books. 139 books. That constantly amazes me. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
America Outdoors features the flawless delivery of host Lance Podolsky.
Excuse me, got something, excuse me, down the wrong tube there. And,
100 KSTP.
Taking your calls on the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. That's area code 702-727-1295. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And what a program it has been. Brad Steiger is my guest. He'll be back with you, your questions, your calls, in a moment. What you're listening to, of course, is Cusco. It's a Burimac 3, Nature, Spirit, and Pride. And I've been playing it for some time. Finally, you can get it. But the deal that I've got for you is going to expire in a couple of days. I said a couple of days. November 1st, it's over. You can order Cusco's new Apuramac 3 album, $15.98 for a CD, or $9.98 for a cassette. Here's the number. Don't ignore it. 1-800-562-8283. That's 1-800-562-8283. And if you're one of the first 25 this night, your album or CD will be autographed by Cusco's own Michael Holm. Now, you can also order the special limited edition 3-CD box set. This one contains all of the Apuramac. Apuramac 1, 2, and 3, and they all go directly to the soul. $39.95, along with an awesome autographed poster of the Buffalo Spirit Warrior featured on the cover of Apuramac 3. So, it's almost over. Once again, Cusco's new Apuramac 3, $15.98 CD, $9.98 cassette, or the limited edition 3-CD Apuramac 3, just $39.95. Here's the number again. Don't blow this off. It's just about all over. 1-800-562-8283. Away. Boy, that is some piece of music. I've got a kind of a special piece of music at the bottom of the hour, too, that I'll tell you about toward the bottom of the hour. Something interesting occurred, not that you heard it, because it occurred during the break, but again, I've got a very interesting telephone system here, the most modern of the modern, that takes a guest and locks the line in so nothing can go wrong. But sometime during the break, Brad Steiger disappeared. Now I got him back. I've got him back now. But sometime during the break, I don't know when, he disappeared. Fortunately, before the break was over, I happened to look down and notice the line was dead. And Brad says it just went to some sort of recording or something. Weird.
Weird.
This has been an unusual show all the way around. Unusual night. Maybe there is. Do you suppose, Brad, there is something to this All Hallows Eve business?
Most definitely.
Really?
Most definitely. I mean, you can trace it all the way back to, you know, the Celtic observation of the dead and the Day of the Dead in Spanish cultures, and then of course the Catholic Church assuming it to All Hallows Eve, All Saints Night. But there's something about October, and there's something about October 31st that it is significant in so many ways. It seems to be a window area kind of night. It seems to be a doorway to another dimension, and has been. Maybe it's connected with the harvest. Maybe it's connected with things that we can't even dream about at this point. But it is a significant night. There's no question about it.
Was it always your understanding, it was mine anyway, that the Catholic Church was not overly excited about astrology?
There was a time, of course, when every educated person had to know astrology, and that would include... I suppose it'll depend who you ask. There will be scholars who will say that astrology and astronomy were both taught as equal disciplines, and that an educated person, which would include the clergy most of the time throughout our evolution spiritually and religiously, would be part of something that they would learn.
Well, on this recent trip we made, we went into the Vatican, as I mentioned, the Sistine Chapel. And as we came into the Sistine Chapel, or the entrance that leads toward it, there was a gigantic globe encased in glass.
Mm-hmm.
And on this globe, there were nothing but the signs of the zodiac.
Right
in the middle of the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a photograph, in fact, of my wife pointing at Libra, which is her sign.
Right. I've seen that on your web.
Yeah, there you are, right in the middle of the Vatican. I was really, really surprised about that.
No, at a time, as I say, it was a very respected discipline that you could not be considered an educated person unless you knew astrology.
All right. I've got to dredge from you one story, which the audience, particularly the new one, has got to hear, which just scared the fire out of me. This involves, of course, your trip down to a basement.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell that?
Surely. It's, again, one I reflect upon many, many times. This was a situation where it was a journalist in the area who had received reports or saw the police reports about this particular house, had done some research, and had invited us to investigate. At least two grisly murders had taken place, one in the garage, the other in the basement. At the time we were there, prior to our arrival, we were told that blood flowed out of the faucets in the basement, that there was a strange face on the basement, and that the back room where one of the murders had taken place was filled with a great variety of eerie, haunting phenomena. Plus, faces appeared in the mirror, particularly that of a burly, large, burly man with a thick beard. The principals in the home were a teenage girl, a young boy, the mother, and the father. When we arrived, first of all, we turned on the faucet and we saw that it was just rusty water.
Mm-hmm.
Which could look like blood, especially if all kinds of other eerie paranormal phenomena were happening around you.
Sure.
We were a very difficult time getting the family to even go with us to the basement. They were so frightened of it. The face was a doll's face that had somehow been impressed into one of the walls.
Yeah.
So eerie, but, you know, again, nothing to be frightened of. But then there was the back room. Now, this was a very old home, and it was apparent what they had done somewhere along the line is just cover the dirt floor with cement. So it was very uneven and had rough ridges here and there from, you know, kind of an amateurish job of pouring cement over dirt. Now, the back room, the door, in order to close it, you had to push it uphill. Now, we've all been in situations where a door swings so easily open.
Sure.
But seldom does a door swing close. Now, especially this one had to go uphill, so to speak, and had to go over one of those rough cement ridges.
So you had to sort of help
push
it close. Push it up, yeah.
Right. You know, and then you would hit that rough spot and then give it another push. Well, while I was in investigating and recording impressions and letting the medium record impressions and I was taping it all, I noticed that, and again, I mentioned my friend Glenn, who was with me.
Yes.
He noticed that and tapped to me that the door was closing. The door was going uphill and was pushing itself over that rough ridge and was trying to close. Now, Glenn and the other man with us, the journalist, each weighed a good 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. Art, it took their combined strength to keep that door from closing. It was just literally bowing.
Oh, my.
Now, when I walked out, I said, rather arrogantly, I must admit, in retrospect, I said, all right, if the damn door wants to close, close it and lock it, which they did. We then went upstairs. We were standing in the kitchen discussing various situations. All of a sudden, there was again your explosion, just bam. And it was apparent that that door was just blasted right off its hinges.
Oh, boy.
Then there was the sound of, like, King Kong coming up those basement stairs. Boom, boom, boom. And then there was another explosive sound, and all of us, which would have been about 7 or 8 of us, were lifted into the air and then dropped down.
Oh, my. Into the air.
Into the air. Now, that definitely got my attention as well as everyone else. And I really, at that point, Art, had to really start revising some of my very pat intellectual theories about haunting.
Yeah, in other words, here we don't have a loop going around.
Right, right.
We have somebody getting lifted into the air. We have banging up steps. We have doors shutting. This is real world scary stuff.
Yes. So, first of all, then we have an intelligence that's is going to, okay, you want to mess with my room? I'll close you in it. That's resisted. And then I obviously threw down the gauntlet. And it came after me and everyone else.
Have you done that since?
No, not in that way. I did one situation, and this was quoted, I remember a British author wrote a book, the name escapes me now, but it was on paranormal phenomena, and the last chapter is called The Steiger Effect, because in one situation where I was surrounded by poltergeist activity, and books swirling around and papers flying, and this time I was annoyed, and I just said, cut it the hell out. Mm-hmm. Stop it now. And it stopped.
And it stopped.
And so again, this author theorized, because I wouldn't play its game and because I simply refused to get involved, there is something about the attention factor. And that's why when in visiting haunting situations, the people are frightened, and I think they're feeding it energy. In this particular house, when we arrived, Art, nearly everyone in the family was on the edge of hysteria. They had suffered such an array of haunting phenomena that they were just, I mean, they were just on the edge. Now, obviously, their fear, their focus and concentration was feeding the phenomena, was feeding the energy, and it had built up that kind of power.
So then we feed these things.
Oh, I totally believe that. Our
maybe even the way we feed dreams.
We feed dreams and that electromagnetic energy within us. So probably it gains that way, and it can gain power. That's why a phantom is a ghost. We'll just put quote around ghost now. That's seen repeatedly in the same area, time after time after time. Many towns have a phantom dog, a phantom nun, the phantom horseman, the phantom this. I mean, right. the coast to coast, we have haunting situations that literally, like psychic marionettes, gain an energy of their own, so that they become, in my lexicon, they become phantoms. They become psychological, psychic marionettes, because so many people believe in them, so many people have feared them, so many people have encountered them and fed them their fear, that they literally take on an independent existence.
Well, then the opposite must be love.
Absolutely.
And I know that I think that you and Sherry have written books, have you not, about the phenomena of soulmates?
And the healing power of love.
And the healing power of love.
And then Sherry has a new one out, just out, The Power of Prayer to Heal and Transform Your Life.
Oh, I'll tell you, there's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
Danyon Brinkley is a living example of the healing power of prayer.
Absolutely.
This recent occurrence to Danyon is, I actually flew back to be with him.
How wonderful.
I thought he was leaving us. He had,
yes.
He had four aneurysms going at the same time.
Wow.
He should have been dead. Anyway, picking up on this, I'm going to leave you just a little bit early on this break. Hold on, Brad. I want to sort of set something up here, just because this is sort of important to me. We were coming back from our trip, very extensive trip that you all know about by now, and we were on British Airways, and they play, you know how when you have your headphones on British Airways, they were playing this song, which my wife immediately identified with. I'm married to kind of a wild woman. You know, she is of many tempers and many personalities, and she's an intriguing, one-of-a-kind woman that I absolutely love, as you know. Her name is Ramona. And she identified with this song that must have been a hit in Britain, and we had a really, really hard time finding it here in America. But by gosh, we found it, and I want you to hear a little bit of it. Because according to Ramona, it perfectly describes her. And so what I suggest is that you take a second and listen to the words of this. I'm only going to, you know, play part of it, but listen to the words of it. This is a song that they were playing on the British Airways system as we came back into America, or toward America. And Ramona said, listen to it, Art. It's me. So what I suggest is, if you can, listen to the words.
I hate the world today. You're so good to me, I know, but I can't change. Tried to tell you, but you look at me like maybe I'm an angel underneath. Innocent and sweet. Yesterday I cried. Must have been relieved to see the softer side. I can understand how you'd be so confused. I don't envy you. I'm a little bit of everything. All rolled into one. I'm a bitch. I'm a lover. I'm a child. I'm a mother. I'm a sinner. I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm your help. I'm your dream. I'm not. Take me as I am. This may mean you'll have to be a stronger man. Rest assured that when I start to make you nervous and I'm going to extremes, tomorrow I will change and today won't mean a thing. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm your help. I'm your dream. I'm nothing in between. No, you wouldn't want it any other.
Coast to Coast AM.
When you think you got me figured out, the season's already changing. I think it's cool you do what you do, and don't try to save me. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm the same. I do not feel ashamed.
And that song that Ramona said is all hers, probably all a lot of females, is not for us to understand. We should remember that. love. Fools, I think not.
Smart.
All right, back to Brad Steiger in the stretch run. Brad, we've got a zillion people on the phone, of course.
Kevin, I just wanted to say, kind of bring it back to how we began tonight when you asked what is the purpose and why do we enjoy being frightened and hearing these stories. My younger daughter was probably 9 when we moved into a country house that was really had the gamut of haunting phenomenon. Just before we bought the place, one of the relatives said, "Oh boy, this is perfect for you, Steiger, writing about ghosts because you're moving into a haunted house." That was a nephew of the person whose house we had bought, and it truly was. My daughter, the 9-year-old, being the youngest, really took the brunt of the haunting. I mean, the poor child was terrified. She's 32 now, and last summer we were kind of talking about it again and getting her responses, and she said, "You know, Dad, it was horrible living through it, but," she said, "at the same time, it really proved to me that there's life after death, that there is an unseen world, and the questions that so many people ask themselves, you know, is there life after death? Do we go on?" She says, "I had answered for me in maybe a spooky and frightening way. But," she says, "now that I'm older, I see it in a whole different picture, is that that answered questions for me that some people will always be asking." So I think that's what all of these ghost stories, to some people who look at it superficially, really mean. They are truly, some of them eerie, some of them spooky, some of them positive and affirming. They do give evidence that life goes on.
Well, yes, that's the larger picture. But
That's the larger picture.
I've got to say this. I have always, all my life, enjoyed ghost stories. And every year I do Ghost to Ghost, and we tell ghost stories for a day or two around Halloween. But it was always a sort of a vicarious enjoyment for me, enjoying being scared. It's like going to a scary movie or something.
There's that part of it.
I enjoyed the vicarious part of it, but there was a little bit of separation. A couple hours ago, when there was that giant rap on my door, my entire thought about everything modified itself, because it scared the you know what out of me. I'm not kidding.
You just got a real reality check there.
That's right. West of the Rockies, you've been on the line a long time. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Brad Steiger.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Where are you, sir?
I'm Bob, and I'm in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to say that I personally have had an experience, not a near-death experience, but rather a sort of gnosis type thing.
A what?
Gnosis. Knowledge.
Oh, knowing.
Oh, yes, okay.
Yeah.
Gnosis, yeah.
Uh-huh. And it deals very heavily with ancient Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really struggling to understand it, but I have gotten something out of it that I believe has not been seen before.
What?
About a year ago, I started studying their art. I had no previous interest in it, actually.
Mm-hmm. You mean ancient Egyptian art?
Right. Mm-hmm. Hieroglyphs.
And, right. Okay.
Basically everything involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to put elements of it together, separating parts of it here and there. And it seemed like certain things went together with other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I started combining these.
Mm-hmm.
And soon I was getting portraits and pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And things that, you know, I couldn't understand, but yet were very Egyptian.
Mm-hmm.
And
may I ask what your ethnic heritage is?
Nationality-wise?
Yes.
I'm Irish.
Okay.
So I started putting these things together and connecting them, and I realized that these were concealed images.
Mm-hmm.
And every time it was like it was an intuitive thing that this was right, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I had arranged these right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm left with these images, and they're really quite interesting.
All right. Well, we talked about this in a way earlier because we said that the ancient Egyptians appeared to understand thousands of years ago something about death and dying in an afterlife that we don't understand. So it may well be that what they did in hieroglyphs and what they did in their art would be able to put together some knowledge for you if you studied it. Does that seem logical to you, Brad?
Yeah, and Bob, if you want to, Xerox some of the ones that are especially meaningful to you, send them to me, and I'd be happy to send you my interpretation.
Yeah, that'd be an option. Like I say, I think these are things that haven't been seen before.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, fire them to Brad, would you?
Yes, I will.
All right, thank you very much. And I guess, we'll do it again in about 10 minutes and give out your address. So anybody who doesn't yet have it, get a pencil and a paper, and we'll do that. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Tim calling from Anchorage.
Anchorage, Alaska. Yes, sir.
You know, it was mentioned reincarnation, and someone mentioned of Hebrews 9:27, that they only have one time to live.
Correct, yes.
And, you know, something interesting about Hebrews is that it's the only book in the New Testament, at least that I know of, where the author is unknown. And there are five references to Isaiah and John the Baptist. And they're all in harmony with each other. And yet, this one in Hebrews is out of harmony with the rest. And if you read Hebrews, it's very uninspiring. It was like it was written by, inspired by a man instead of being inspired by God.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something else in Hebrews, too, that kind of endears it to preachers because it mentions you got to give 10% of what you make to the church.
That's right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can't believe in reincarnation. I believe John the Baptist was reincarnated from Elias or Elijah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
those are interesting observations.
Thank you.
You're a thinking, thoughtful person.
You have a good night.
All right. Take care, and thank you very much for the call. I think the Bible is a wonderful work. I have doubt that it is the precisely translated word for word. I think that there is interpretation of man involved in it, and I don't know about all the translations, and so I don't, you know, people who believe it literally I'm like you, Brad. I would never argue with them, nor would I attempt to disrupt their faith in any way. But from my own point of view, I don't take it necessarily completely literally.
Marvelous passages of inspiration and guidance that are eternal.
Yes.
But as you say, so keenly, spiritually inspired that they can speak to us as individuals.
Indeed. First time caller line, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Good morning.
Good morning, Art and Brad.
Hi.
This is Lee from San Diego County.
Yes.
And I can speak to the loveliness of the Lady Ramona, because I met her this weekend.
Yes, you did.
I haven't seen those other sides. But I wanted to make just a couple of affirmative points. And the first of those, I come from a long family line of women that are quietly connected to occasional paranormal experience. And your discussion of dreams, I was greatly distressed when I woke from a dream one night, and there a light drawing form materialized that was offering just amazing comfort and love. And I reached out, because I'm a touchy kind of a person, I reached out and I touched it, and I felt a tingle and a vibration, an electrical buzz, a kind of a low-level shock that really speaks to that electromagnetic force that an entity has.
Right, right.
The other point I wanted to make was that you called our earthly experience a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened earlier as some had called and argued like jailhouse lawyers. I just need to emphasize that with time and with more and more experience, as in school, our outlook really broadens and we begin to understand the enormity of God's love and the encompassing, the all-encompassing nature of it.
Exactly.
And it's been very interesting listening to you tonight. Because I've been really suppressing my availability to receive over the last few years because I've been very busy and it takes a lot of energy. And the synchronicity that I've been experiencing over the last 2 years, like I said, just always tickles me. And your discussion tonight truly, truly did that.
Oh, wonderful.
I enjoyed this very much, and I hope that others have really listened carefully and understood that we are on differing levels, and there are so many things that we can experience and understand if we open ourselves to them, but do it with the protection of God's love, because it makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
It's probably a good place for a warning. There are a lot of people who go, particularly children, teenagers, who just go blunderbussing into this and go out and get a Ouija board and invite all kinds of things in.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be a great person to perhaps give them a warning ahead of Halloween here about what's a good idea and what's not such a good idea.
Well, certainly the Ouija board. And whenever I speak out against it, I get all kinds of letters. All people are divinely guided by it and so forth. Well, perhaps those are very experienced individuals who surround themselves by the love of God's light and so forth. But too many kids look at it as a game, and it is not a game. It is nothing to play around with. Certainly, the whole idea of opening yourself to spirit possession, which is what you're doing with a Ouija board, unless you are just playing games, but even on the lower level, superficial game playing level, which again, it's not a game, even though it's sold as one.
Sure.
It really opens up to deceitful entities. I've worked with so many people who have caught themselves in a very difficult trap. People who have become hysterical afterwards. I've had so many times, especially years ago, parents bringing their children to me after a slumber party and things just got out of control with the Ouija board. It is nothing to play around with, nor is it to play around with to open yourself to entities. Again, The holy books of all traditions say, by their works ye shall know them, and test the spirits, test the entities. Be certain, as I said, Sherry says it so well when she says, you know, these beings do not appear as grotesque monsters. They appear loving and seductive and full of light. You must test them. And with Halloween coming up, truly, there are energies abroad on this hallowed and sacred night, and we should be respectful of those entities, as the recent caller just said, surround ourselves with the love of God's light, and the light of God's love, however you want to say it, and wear that as an armor, because there are negative entities out there who just love to possess young, vital human beings. They are especially susceptible because of their lack of experience. But with our bombardment of our culture today, kids get pseudo-sophisticated too early. They are not sophisticated, but they have the veneer because they're able to imitate and copy so much of what they see on television and the movies. But they haven't had the maturity. They haven't had the time to attain wisdom. And parents, don't repress, don't be strict, in the sense of going overboard, but be aware of what your child is doing. Be aware of what your child is experimenting with. And concern yourself and involve yourself with your parents, I'm saying to the kids now. You won't find them completely stuffy and stodgy. You will find that they actually had a life once upon a time. They were actually young. They actually went through the torment and tortures and the emotional pains that you're going through. And parents, don't be afraid to involve yourself. Don't be afraid to be rejected by your young person. Don't be afraid to have a family prayer circle. Don't be afraid to have, whether you read from the Bible or whether you read from Yogananda or whether you read from any inspirational book, don't be afraid to do that as a family and take an active role in your child's spiritual development.
Just be careful. Something invited in innocently as fun or at a party on the 31st could be with you through 1998 and years to come.
And remember, you do have to invite them in. You can resist them.
All right, we may have time for one more call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Brad Steiger. Hello.
Hi, how's you doing this morning?
Just fine. Not a lot of time. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just thought I'd call. I did have a question for him. By the way, I'm calling from Minnesota. I'm raining the St. Croix out here.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I live in a really old house built in 1857.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who built the house settled the town and, from what I understood, took two Indian wives.
Mm-hmm.
And legend has it, I guess you'd say, that he murdered them both in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's a spooky old house kind of thing, but it's always had that, you know, someone's watching you air about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have friends, you know, that are 300 pounds of testosterone that won't come in this house at night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, myself, I'm over 300 pounds, and I just get spooked about this house.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was wondering is, I mean, have you ever heard of anything in the way of a spirit protecting its own house?
Oh, yes. There are spirits that haunt people. There are spirits that haunt houses. And there are more haunted places, believe me, than there are haunted people. The atmosphere, as we said, somehow we don't understand it yet, my friend, but these impressions are ingrained. They become imbued into the environment. And people of the proper sensitivity, and just because you're a macho guy, that doesn't mean on one level you're very sensitive and susceptible to the energies around you. So, yes, it's the place, more often than not, that has the haunting.
Yeah, and when we're talking about spirits, I don't think body weight carries a whole lot of...
No, no.
All right, listen, we're way out of time, so give us, if you would, two things. One, your address again, and then the 800 number for any books.
Thank you, Art. The 800 number, which you can order any of our books, is 800-862-2923. And we would love to hear from you in terms of your experiences. Please, though, send a stamp self-addressed envelope, because we just get hundreds of pieces of mail here. And that's Post Office Box 434, Forest City. That's Forest like a group of trees. Forest City, Iowa, 50436.
I guess for those who are writing, do the address once more.
Post Office Box 434, Forest City, Iowa, 50436.
What a wonderful show. Brad, as always, it just zipped right on by. 5 hours gone.
Boy.
We will, of course, do it again. It's been one of the best. Thank you, my friend.
Well, thank you. Sherry said to say hello to both of you.
Okay, good night.
Take care.
That's it. Folks, we're out of time. That's Brad Steiger. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. Good night.